and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
They don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. Pennsylvania State Senator Vince Hughes, the Democratic Appropriations Chairman, going to be here talking about the budget. Going to be here talking about the slash and burn budget, the stealing of a future from the future generation of this country, because we've got some bizarre idea that we need to slash and burn education. There has got to be a better way, and I've advocated for raising some revenue, making some sane, rational cuts, a balanced approach where, you know, we do have some shared sacrifice. Instead of saying, here, corporations, here's a whole boatload of money. And, oh, you children, never mind. Good luck. Just hope that the corporations stay around long enough that you can do some hand labor for them. Because that's kind of the way I'm seeing this. Because what kind of a business is going to stick around where you have uneducated people, where you have a crumbling infrastructure? So it'll be interesting to talk to Senator Hughes. In the second hour, we're going to talk with Isaiah Poole from the Campaign for America's Future about the decline of the middle class and how we get it back. This whole assault that's going on workers across this country. And also in the second hour, Roxanne Pauline from the Northeast Pennsylvania ALF is going to be here to talk about a big rally that we went to today. We promoted it for a couple of days, but we were up there today, and I'm going to talk about that in a minute. And also in the third hour, Scott Keyes, a researcher over at Think Progress, going to be here talking about Representative Paul Ryan from Wisconsin. Evidently, he went to a town hall meeting of supporters, if you will, and you know they were kind of with him up until he started talking about cutting Medicare and some of the things that he wants to do. They booed him, and rightfully so. Also, your calls 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Also, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Today, 12 years ago today, was the beginning of the Tiananmen Square protests. And it really, you know, having gone to this rally today, up in Pottsville made me think back to that. Cause I remember the media coverage. I remember the bravery of those students. And that's really where I think all of this is going to spring from, which is why I've told the college kids who have come here to the Capitol and to Kutztown, that you need, when summer comes, school's out, you need to bring a sleeping bag, a toothbrush, and you need to camp out here. You need to make sure that they understand that you're not leaving until they secure your future, as they have done for past generations. And I look at this rally this afternoon, and you had the Republican hit squad over at the International Chamber of Commerce. And I call them the International Chamber of Commerce because they have a large number of these worker assault training camps all over the world. It's not just here, it's all over the world. So today, direct from the home office, one of the chamber's top workers' rights assassins found his way to Pottsville, Pennsylvania. And his goal was to train local businesses on the art of denying workers their rights on the job. Pottsville, Pennsylvania, kind of an interesting place to choose to hold one of these attack camps, considering the rich and bloody history of workers' struggles in this area over the last 150 years. I mean, literally blocks from where we were standing, literally blocks from where the hired gun was creating the next wave of economic terrorists, is where they hung six suspected Molly Maguires. Hung them. For some reason. And most people think there was no reason at all, other than that they stood up to the establishment. They stood up to the power of the day. And it's interesting to think that in the coal fields of Pottsville, Pennsylvania, where so much blood has been spilled to secure the rights of workers to organize and to collectively bargain, that the radical right feels emboldened to rub the workers' nose in the corporate dominance that has returned to this area. Where the battles once raged, they feel that they now have control. And, you know, it's not been too long that I took a trip up to the site where the Latimer Massacre happened. And it's just down the road from Pottsville, a place where 19 miners were gunned down in cold blood, with scores more injured and maimed. And I stood on the site where those workers, who sought nothing more than a fair shake, a decent wage, and a shot at a better tomorrow, I stood on the spot where they walked in protest against the treatment of an elite class who saw them as nothing more than a tool to be used and discarded, basically at whim. And I stood on that spot. I stood there where they were left shot in the back and left to bleed to death by these hired thugs, these mercenaries, these murderers. And I saw the land. I saw the land where this ambush of peacefully marching workers, peacefully marching citizens, where this happened. And where it happened, there was no escape for these folks. There was nowhere to go. So what you had, 19 families, no justice, 19 families left empty. But it was the 19 labor martyrs who were gunned down during the Latimer Massacre, who, like the 146 immigrant women who burnt to death in New York City years later in the Garment District, who changed the direction of this nation for all of us. And we benefit from that today. So what you have is you have the modern-day robber baron hopefuls. They had their little meeting there today. But much to their surprise, they were met by more than 100 of today's peaceful citizens, those peaceful citizens of the working class who stand together to ensure that future generations never have to relive those brutal and bloody years to refight what has already been won. And what's interesting to me is the radical right thinks we're going to go and we're going to take these attacks quietly. And I think today the men and women of Schuylkill County sent a very clear message. But it was only a visual message. It's now got to be followed up by action. We need to follow them everywhere. We need to be there all the time, ever vigilant, and make sure that none of this stuff goes unchallenged. So every time you hear an anti-worker comment, every time you hear someone speak up in a restaurant, oh, those greedy teachers, someone stands up to them and says no. That's what it's going to take. It's going to take an active working class in this country to return us to the prosperity that we once enjoyed. You know what I worry about? I worry that my kids are going to look back and go, that middle class thing that my dad told me about, that I'm never going to see, and my children are only going to read about in science fiction books, how was it stolen from us? And I don't want to be the one to tell them that it was our generation that let it go. So when I look at what happened today, when the International Chamber of Commerce sent their hired gun, it was a sign, and it was a slap in the face to the working people of this area, that they felt emboldened that they control this area. 20 years ago, that never happened. That was a strong union area. It was a strong working class area because, you know what, people remembered stories about the battles. They remembered the marches, the protests, the blood, the pain, the suffering. They remembered. They remembered how the 40-hour week came about. They remembered how they got overtime rights. They remembered how they got safety on the job. And today, what is it, the 40-year anniversary of the passage of OSHA? It's only been 40 years that workers have had a right to a safe workplace. Only 40 years. And maybe, you know, maybe I go back and I look at that. Maybe it was maybe 40 years ago they should have never passed OSHA. Maybe it should have been something that the workers on the job site fought for every single day. And every day when they went to work, they said, this is what we've fought for. This is what we've won. This is ours, and we're not going to lose it. Maybe that's what we need to go back to. Maybe we need to go back to the days where we take to the streets like what happened today up in Schuylkill County. Maybe this is what needs to happen. Maybe the people of this country have to take to the streets and become militant. Because evidently, the investor class feels emboldened. They feel that we're complacent and we're going to allow them to just roll over us. And you look at stories across the states, across Michigan, across Wisconsin, Indiana, you name it. These attacks are not just after union people. They're after all working people. And look, I know folks who've worked all their lives, have never joined a union, know nothing about it, but they still understand the basic premise that if the floor falls out, if there's no bottom to the barrel, the race to the bottom of it never ends. If there's no net to catch us, we will continue to fall. And that's what the union has been able to do, put a floor under our feet. They never put a ceiling over our head, but they've always put a floor under our feet and said, you know what? We're not going to fall below this. Republicans want to take us back, and a number of Democrats want to take us back to the days where there was no floor, where you were disposable. You were somebody that they could just say, next. And I'm telling you, folks, the battles are coming. The battles are coming. So today, interesting day, and we're going to talk to Roxanne Pauline about that a little later. Because she actually went into the meeting, so we're going to find out exactly what they talked about, because they were talking about what labor's agenda is. You know what labor's agenda is? To make workers a little bit better off. To make their futures a little bit brighter. Their children's opportunities a little greater. That's what it's about. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this, Senator Vince Hughes, back after this.
Just right. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
To start taxing money made from money the same as money made from work is a common sense measure that could generate significant revenue, and we think that we should tax wealth like work.
United for a Fair Economy's Mazur Ali. He says their responsible wealth campaign wants America to return to true progressive taxation as an alternative to huge budget cuts that hurt the most vulnerable. The Responsible Wealth Campaign includes many upper-income individuals who advocate higher taxes on investment income as an alternative to slash-and-burn budgets that shred the social safety net. Taxing wealth, like work, could generate more than $80 billion a year in federal revenue.
The wealthiest people in this country are paying tax rates that are ultimately lower than most middle-class families. Because of this special treatment of capital gains and dividends, we're losing $84 billion in revenue that could be used to avoid budget cuts. It could be used as federal aid to states so that we don't have to put education and health care on the chopping block.
There's overwhelming public support nationally for taxing the rich more. A national McClatchy-Marist poll this month found 64% of Americans want to raise taxes on people making more than $250,000 a year. A year after the BP oil rig disaster in the Gulf of Mexico, very little has been done to improve worker safety on the oil rigs.
The explosion occurred about 10 o'clock on the 20th in the evening, so I didn't, or nobody knew, really knew about it until the next day. And so it was around mid-morning or noon that I got a call from my father, who was telling me about there being an explosion on Gordon's rig.
This is Chris Jones. His brother, Gordon, was one of the 11 men who were killed in the explosion at the Macondo Well in deep waters off the Louisiana coast last year. Gordon left a 2-year-old son and his wife in her final month of pregnancy. Since the start of the disaster, Jones and his father have been pushing Congress to make changes to protect workers and their families. But while the Oil Spill Commission issued criticisms and recommendations for change in January, little has been done to put those into practice. When asked for interviews about current safety practices, the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management Regulation and Enforcement, BP, and Transocean all refused. Zoe Sullivan, Workers Independent News, New Orleans.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
At every trough you stop to feed. With your arrogance, your ignorance, and greed. Now here come the cuts and redundancy. Through the absolute indifference, the avarice, incompetence, your arrogance, your ignorance, your greed.
You know, it's the cuts they have made. You know, cut, cut, cut. This frame that the Republicans continually use. And the mainstream media has picked up on it. Democrats have seemed to pick up on it, that we need to cut, we need to cut, we need to cut. I'm saying we need revenue improvements, enhancements, whatever you want to call it. We need to bring more money in. And this evening I stopped by my local school board meeting to talk with the superintendent because there's a rumor flying around that the school was looking to cut full-day kindergarten programs. Fortunately, it was only a rumor, but as I was talking to the superintendent, he said, you know, these cuts are going to hurt us. We're going to cut programs that we don't want to have to cut. And why are they going to do it? Because Governor Corbett has this slash-and-burn school budget plan that I believe is going to harm our students for years to come. This is the governor's doing. They say budgets are moral documents. Show me where the morality is in slashing a child's future. Just not there. That's why I've asked Pennsylvania State Senator Vince Hughes to come on the program, talk to us about the Democratic budget plan that comes out that he's going to be putting out. Senator Hughes, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, this is my first time listening to you, baby, but you sound like some good radio to me, man. I just want to tell you. Okay?
I appreciate that, Senator, but I look at this budget and it infuriates me that, look, I got three small kids. Their future is this education that they're going to get, and to take $1 billion from it, to me, is criminal.
Well, it doesn't make any sense. And Rick, if you put the pieces together, if you put the pieces of the puzzle together, at the same time that the governor proposed $1 billion cuts in basic education and almost $750 million cuts in higher education, he is also asking for a $300 million tax cut for the biggest corporations in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania And, of course, one more time, he's given a pass to the Marcellus Shale drillers. So, you know, he basically what he's doing is he's balancing the budget. He's attempting to balance the budget on the backs of working families and kids and folks trying to make a go of it in life. And it's not fair. It's not right. It's not moral. And, you know, we came up with a program to push back on that. And you know, you did the most important thing out of everything that I've heard you say in this first couple of minutes, is that you went to your local school board meeting. You went to hear what was going on. And we need to get folks to engage at that level and reach out to their legislature and say, what the governor's talking about doing is not right. It's not good. It's not the direction we need to go in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I'm right there. And, you know, in talking to the superintendent, he didn't want to cut these programs. He's going, absolutely, look, my hands are tied. They've slashed more budget every year. It's less state funding. Every year it's less state funding. He goes, I can't go back to the taxpayers. It's just not going to happen. We're going to have to cut programs, and kids are going to suffer.
Well, you know, you know what the deal is with most families. You know, they're struggling. They're working hard. They're working 2, 3, 4 jobs to try to make ends meet. And when, you know, they depend upon a strong education system for the future of their children, the future of their family. And when you put them in a situation where you get fewer resources from Harrisburg, then the only thing that's going to mean, as your superintendent says, is that, you know, Rick, I'm going to have to figure out how to either cut activities in the school or I'm going to have to raise local property taxes. Well, you know, this is a backdoor tax increase coming out of the governor's office. And the reality is that most families can't afford to pick up more out of their own pocketbook. There's a person, and I have to tell the story, because it represents so much of what working people are going through in Pennsylvania and across the country. You know, I gave one of my speeches on the floor a week or two ago, and the next day someone came to me, and it was an employee of the Senate. I won't say, won't put out their name. And they just came to me and said, look, I really want to thank you for your comments on the floor and the fight that you've been waging because, you know, you talked about what's going on in my house. And this individual said, you know, I come to work at 8 o'clock in the morning. I leave at 6. I go to my next job at 7. I get off at 6 the next morning. I take a couple hours and I come back to work. This person is working 20 hours a day. Rick, you hear me?
Yep.
And they can't pull it all together. So that's what working people are dealing with. They need the state to step up. And, you know, we think we can do that, but we got to push back against this governor.
Yeah, here's the thing, and this is where I've said a million times. At the very beginning, I could have been a Tea Partier. I do believe I'm taxed enough already. I believe the working people of this country are taxed enough already. I was angry just like they were, but they took this decidedly right-wing bizarre turn to worship the wealthy and big multinational corporations who I think need to pay more of their share.
Absolutely.
And maybe we wouldn't have these problems.
On and on, you see more and more reports coming out, the Washington Post, the Philadelphia Inquirer, your work all over the country is more reports coming out how major corporations are just, you know, skating their responsibilities in terms of giving back. I don't need to mention Marcellus Shale because you've already beaten that. You've already set the deal on that. And, you know, if they don't contribute, why does the average working guy, the working woman, have to pay, have to have this bounce back? This budget bounced on their back when they're trying to make it through their own personal budget, and the major corporations in the Commonwealth are just getting off scot-free.
I'll tell you why, and don't take this personally, or maybe take it personally, but those folks don't have lobbyists. They don't have an army of lobbyists to go and put campaign cash into the coffers of you know, the governor took $1 million from the Marcellus Shale people. Are we surprised? No, I'm not surprised at all.
I'm not surprised, but the truth of the matter is, Rick, the people have folks that they vote for, all right? And the people that they vote for, we've got to stay more connected. The average person's got to stay more connected to their legislator, to their senator, and put the pressure on us, each one of us, to do the right thing as far as this budget is concerned.
I'm with you on that.
Our program is real simple. We can look at programs that, number one, in Pennsylvania, the Democratic program, our program is, you know, look, the corporations don't get $300 million tax cut. Can't get that, okay? Right. And the Marcellus Shale guys, they gotta put some skin in the game. They gotta put some money up to protect the environment and to pay their local shares to the local communities, you know, to do the right kinds of things. And then we know that there are programs that work in Pennsylvania that if we expanded them statewide, we can find budget savings. And it's not very important, Rick. We can create larger budget savings in the state budget and not make budget cuts to get to a balanced budget, okay? We can, you know, some things like combining different departments, make them work more efficiently, have better sentencing patterns in our corrections program, make things work better there. And then we can skip to the number that we need to get to without balancing the budget on the backs of working families, without major cuts in education, without major cuts in higher education, without cutting healthcare programs, and without cutting our job creation program, which is one of the craziest things about this whole thing. He wants to take the whole Department of Community and Economic Development and cut their budget on 50%. And this is the program that is a job creator program in projects all across the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. So I need folks to raise their voice. I need them to actually spend more time listening to you, man.
Well, I appreciate that. But the thing, this is what I've been telling the college kids, because we were trying to work with them to get them fired up because this is their future. 56% cuts to higher education. I said as soon as you take your finals, grab a sleeping bag and a toothbrush and go camping in that capital until that funding gets restored and your future is restored. Because like the one kid told me on the steps of the Capitol for the one rally, he goes, you know, my grandfather and up until 10 years ago, my father worked at the local factory. The local factory is gone. I've got nothing to go back to. If I can't get an education, there's nothing for me to go back to.
Right. Well, that's the story with so many kids. You know, it used to be, as you know, Rick, it used to be a kid would go to college and they would work during the summertime, maybe pick up a few extra dollars here and there. And, you know, that'd be their fun money. That'd be their spend money. Now it's more vital that they work during the summer because they need those extra dollars just to pay the current tuition rate that they have, let alone a projected 25 to 30% tuition increase that might occur if these budget cuts become the law of the land. And, you know, what will happen is a four-year degree, what once was a four-year degree, has over the last decade or so now it's taken 5 years to get that four-year degree. If we if these budget cuts go in place, what universities will have to do, will do a couple of things. They'll have to raise tuition rates, and then they'll have to reduce class offering.
Right.
So what that means is that, you know, if you needed a particular biology class to graduate, that class might conflict with another class, and then you won't be able to take it until another semester. So you have to go to a school for an extra semester to pick up that extra class. So that what now is 5 years now becomes 5.5 to 6 years before you graduate. And what that means is added debt on that young person to try to get their college degree.
Yeah, and it's a damn shame, I'll tell you. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Pennsylvania State Senator Vince Hughes. Vince, you know, I'm looking at something that's just driving me absolutely nuts, and I'm hoping you can help me here. This voucher thing has just got me nuts. You know, I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland.
Okay.
And they did this really dumb thing back in the 70s. Probably the dumbest thing I've ever heard of. They took poor kids from the west side of Cleveland, put them on buses and drove them all the way to the east side of Cleveland and took the kids from the east side and bussed them over to the west side. For one reason or another, I have no idea, but it spent a whole lot of money. It wasted a whole lot of money and it really destroyed the Cleveland public school system as it did to a lot of cities around the country. I see this voucher tax, this voucher bill doing almost the exact same thing, but worse, but more devious. Taking public compulsory education and privatizing it for the profiteers to walk away with all of the benefits while my kids and other kids suffer.
Well, yeah, I think you hit it on the head, Rick. Look, we've researched the issue, and the only good thing that's come out of this conversation about vouchers is it's really forced us to pay extra special attention to what's going on in districts in schools that have been struggling for many, many years. And that's important. We've got to do that. But, you know, we've done the research. Vouchers, number one, is unconstitutional. The concept is unconstitutional. You're not allowed to provide public dollars to private or religious institutions in this fashion. And so it's unconstitutional. Number one, it's not proven anywhere to work. In the places that it's been tried, in Milwaukee and Washington, D.C., places like that, and Milwaukee's been around for probably about two decades. There's no proven record of academic achievement for the kids going to school in Milwaukee or Washington or any other place. So it's an experiment. If the idea, if the proposal is to try to improve academic achievement for kids in struggling schools, vouchers is not the solution because it's not proven to work. All right. In addition to the fact, it's a huge budget buster. You know, we've done some fiscal analysis in the Appropriations Committee that says that, you know, this is like an $800 to $900 million cost that'll come out of other public schools to go to just to deal with this particular concept. You know, so, you know, what we need to be doing is in the business of taking especially those struggling schools, Rick, and say, look, we've got to do something special there. We've got to do something significant there. It's not fair that these kids be locked into an environment that where achievement is so difficult. You know, we got to take the things that we know work. We've got to take class sizes and drive it down to 15 and 16 and 17 kids in a class. We've got to do the things that we again know that works. If you lengthen the school day and school on Saturdays and quite frankly, school during the summer, 4 to 6 weeks of school during the summer.
Yep.
And you know, I know that may not be popular with most students, but the truth of the matter is the greatest loss of academic achievement occurs when a kid gets out of school in June and when they go back to school in September. That 3 month break right there, that's when a lot of young people lose their what it is that they learn. I remember that. I know you remember that. It's kind of common sense. But if you take things that work and intensify them in these struggling schools, you can make a difference. Vouchers is not the solution.
Absolutely right there with you. Last thing before we wrap this up, this budget that you guys are proposing, I got to be honest, I'm looking at the numbers, and it's a good budget. It's a good, you know, there's a lot of good stuff here. Do you think it's going to get any traction? I mean, 30-20 in the Senate, the House, not much there. What kind of traction do you think you're going to get on this?
Look, there's a lot of Republican senators that are not happy with what the governor's proposal is. A lot of them. And many of them in senior level positions. So we've been sharing information. They've been sharing information with us. We've been going back and forth talking about what we could do with some of these ideas. And, you know, we've even had some conversations with members of the administration, you know, if they can buy into some of this thing. And there's some traction going on with this, Rick. There's some traction going on. We think that we can restore the money in education. We think that we can restore the money in healthcare. We think we can restore the money in job creation programs, and especially the HMAP program, which is the home a mortgage foreclosure prevention program. We've got to drive dollars in there, because if we drive dollars in there, that brings down at least $105 million from the federal government to help folks not have to go through a foreclosure process and lose their home. There is some traction, Rick. There's buying on both sides of the aisle. Is buying in the House and the Senate, and in fact, there's some folks in the administration who are interested in doing some of this stuff also. So we're going to keep on pushing it. And what we really need you to do, Rick, we need you to pump it up, man.
Yeah,
we really need you to pump it up.
For me, a non-starter on any of this budget stuff is leaving the Delaware loophole wide open and leaving the drillers walking away. Sorry, those are two revenue sources that to me are no-brainers.
Well, you know, if you do some research, you find, and we're working on this right now. And Senator Tartaglione, who's a good, tried and true former USCW member, she's been trying to track down exactly who these corporations are that are evading paying their fair share in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And we're trying to track down and see exactly how these drillers have set up their operation across the Commonwealth, because they may be doing some extra evading of taxes also.
That's where you
We're
start.
We're working, man, but we need your voice, brother. We need your voice.
Thank you so
All
much,
right?
Senator Hughes. Thanks so much.
Right,
great
take
talking
care,
to you. Pennsylvania State Senator Vince Hughes. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Drowning in crack and lies. Baby USA.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
House Speaker John Boehner, Majority Leader Eric Cantor, and Budget Chairman Paul Ryan. like to portray themselves as the Three Budgeteers. Decrying deficits, the GOP's sharp-eyed slashers of federal spending are galloping through Congress with swords flashing, severing billions, nay, trillions, from the national budget. Medicare for seniors, behead it. Food stamps for the poor, whack 'em. Environmental protections, eviscerate 'em. Consumer agency, kill it. Practically all of the slash-and-burn rampage by the three budgeteers comes at the expense of America's middle class and the poor. For corporate powers and the wealthy elites, however, the dynamic trio offers more governmental gimmies, including a one-third cut in their tax rates. The budgeteers are also demanding that government workers take cutbacks. But wait, aren't Boehner, Cantor, and Ryan workers too? Well, yes, but very special workers. So when they recently took our government to the brink of a total shutdown, guess who they rushed to protect? Not emergency responders, toxic waste cleanup crews, air traffic controllers, or millions of other federal employees we count on, but themselves. In the Senate, Barbara Boxer had passed a bill to suspend the paychecks of all Congress critters if the government shuts down, but the three budgeteers blocked it in the House, thus protecting the $174,000 a year that each lawmaker sucks from us taxpayers. But then, the GOP threesome cynically tried to trick the public about their perfidy. They made a show of approving a House version of the congressional pay suspension, but tucked it into a bill with zero chance of passing. This is Jim Hightower saying, Boehner, Cantor, Ryan, remember those names. They think they're clever, and they are hoping that you are stupid.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
$1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. What do you think about this budget thing? You know, they keep saying that, you know, it's about morality, it's about family values. Explain to me how Governor Corporate's budget does any of that stuff. Explain to me how you can really look yourself in the face in the mirror and say, yeah, I'm doing the best for the state's future by chopping $1 billion from K-12, 56% of the higher ed gone. To me, that just seems, well, it seems like you're whacking off your nose in spite of your face. And maybe that's the plan. And, you know, as I talked to this superintendent, it was just a brief conversation. My feeling was that he thinks that we're going down the road to destroying public education. This whole move to privatization, this whole corporations can do it better. The testing industry is all corporate. We can't trust the teachers anymore. They've done a nice job of pushing that mean out there. They've done a really good job of pushing that frame that they're these just lazy, greedy teachers who can't pass their own tests. How many times have you heard that? That, oh, there's a teacher and she can't pass the test that she gives. I mean, personally, I think it's ignorant, but that's the frame that they throw out there. And, you know, the more I look at this, the more I play with this, the more I have to think that as we move down the road and as we continue this battle to save education, we had better figure out how to come together and really stand together and save this.
Well, I think the college students that you talked to said it maybe better than any of us.
Yep.
When my father grew up, and his father, there was plenty of jobs. The jobs aren't there. And the one hope they have is education. And if that's taken away, there's a very dim future for these young kids.
Yep. You look at that money, the money that they're slashing and handing off to corporations. To me, it's a crime. Let's go to the phone lines. We got John on line one. How you doing tonight, John?
All right, Rick. How you doing?
I'm terrific. What can I do? What do you got on your mind?
Not a whole lot, man. This is the first time I've listened to you. I'm just kind of Android, kind of searching around. But basically, what I want to talk about is I'm a FedEx employee.
Okay.
A FedEx independent contractor.
Okay.
So where UPS is in with the union, most of your FedEx drivers, whether you know it or not,
they're independent contractors.
Independent contractors.
Which means they don't pay into your Social Security, they don't pay workman's comp, they don't pay any of that stuff.
They don't pay anything.
Right.
Which, I make a good living. I'm a middle class guy, I got two kids, we make a good living. And on the other end of me being an independent contractor and then compete with UPS, in my area, UPS, believe it or not, will sell out for anything. These are union guys. And I go in and I make a pickup, and we're all good friends. We eat lunch together. They'd rather give me the work because they'd rather pick up one package than 50. They'll give me the 50.
I'm missing your point.
My point is, with these union guys, and you take it up for the, you know, all over. It's the union folks all over the place. And I'm telling you, to see it in person, they would rather say, all right, I make $30 an hour to pick up one box, or I make $30 an hour to pick up 150.
Well, you see, what you've got is what you're telling me. You know, look, I was in the freight business for 21 years. So you're not going to give me this scenario without my having some insight. Hold on, John. You had your say.
Okay.
You had your say, brother.
Okay.
If that is happening, you have really got some very bad management people over there at UPS, and they should probably be fired because they're not properly using their workforce. The other part of this is, I'm sorry, it may be something that happens once in a while, but I can't imagine it happens often because I've never seen that. Sorry.
No, it's not the management. It's the employees.
No, at the end of the day.
It's the union guys that are making the 30 bucks an hour that would say, they give me, as an independent contractor for FedEx, more business than I could have a sales rep go out and do for myself.
No.
Because what they tell the people that they're picking up, I don't care if you have one box or 50.
No.
I would rather have you one and give the independent contractor at FedEx Ground 50. With this FedEx Ground guy, I'm coming in, hey, that's fine with me.
Well, you know what, John? I gotta be honest with you. If you've got that kind of gig going, good for you, brother. You are definitely in the minority. I appreciate the call, though. Thank you so much.
No, it's not the majority. It's majority.
No, you know, at the end of this, look, you know, and at the end of the road here, the reality is, you know, maybe you got one story. Maybe John here is a very lucky guy, and he's got some very giving folks that say, go ahead, take those packages. At the end of the day, anybody who knows anything about the pickup business, before that driver is sent out, management knows what's to be picked up. And this idea that, oh, here, yeah, you go ahead and take this, never going to happen. I'm sorry, I'm not buying it. Not buying it at all. Because, again, you know, it's one of these things that, these frames that they love pitching out there. And I'm just not buying it. You?
No. I've been around the shipping department where I worked for a while, and I've seen the way things are. Could it happen? A day here, a day there, occasionally. Yep. But
I got
right.
A full truck, you know, for some reason.
Generally, management's job is to know what comes in and comes out.
And if it is happening, management should be fired. But here's the problem with this. You look at what he talked about. The big problem that I have with it, here's a guy who, he admitted, he said it himself. They don't pay unemployment. They don't pay workman's comp. They don't pay any of the taxes. They don't pay anything other than a per box item. You get paid by the piecemeal.
And he's probably making a decent wage. Oh, however, yes, right. However, he's not sick, so he hasn't had to have health care. He didn't get hurt, so he doesn't have to worry about, well, workman's comp. He's only, you know, they don't even pay for it. I don't know that he makes that much that he can afford to pay his own workman's comp insurance. So he's got some problems long term.
And, you know, here's the thing. If that's the case, we better recall it. UPS better know something about that. If anybody out there from UPS is listening, I would love to hear your take on this. Because, you know, I worked for UPS for a couple of summers. They run the, and it's true, the tightest ship in the shipping business. If their management knows something like that's going on, there's some firing happening.
I know guys that work for them, and trust me, they work.
Have you ever walked by one of their trucks with the door open, and you hear that ticking noise? You know what that ticking noise is?
That's a time clock.
That's a clock to find out how long his butt's out of the seat.
Is that right?
That's what that is. So this idea that, all they're doing is sitting on the side of the road or they're sitting around, ain't happening.
Peddle
that story to someone else.
It's a wonder you say that. I've seen them in making the delivery to a business. I mean, they're all business. They sign it, boom, they're gone. It's no, shooting the breeze. And I've also seen them delivery. I have a neighbor across the street that from time to time gets a delivery, and they'll go in, they'll look at, but they don't waste any time. If they see nobody's home, boom, they're going.
You know, maybe where John lives down in South Carolina, that kind of happens. Maybe as Ike tells us all the time, maybe the South is really that lazy. I don't know. I've never seen it.
Well,
I'm going to take a quick
break. Taking that he's legit, too.
Yeah, I'm taking a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Back after this.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Our workers' comp system is a confusing maze of rules, delays, and loopholes, where workers struggle to collect what they are owed. Bills don't get paid, and families struggle to put food on the table after a serious work injury. What happens when you're injured on the job in Pennsylvania? Most people think you just apply for workers' comp, and you'll get paid for lost time, and your medical bills will be covered. Sadly, in Pennsylvania, that is not the case. The good news is, it doesn't have to be that way. Hi, I'm Ron Calhoun, and I'm a Central Pennsylvania workers' compensation attorney. It's my job to make sure injured workers receive the benefits they deserve. In the last 20 years, I have helped hundreds of Pennsylvania workers and their families after they've suffered from a work injury. If you've been injured on the job, I'd like the chance to show you how I might be able to do the same for you. Why not find out what you're rightfully owed? Call me at 717-695-4722. You have nothing to lose and much to gain. Call me at 695-4722.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happy.
Organizing America 3 hours each night. The Rick Smith Show.
That's what that phone call was. I mean, I can't get over that. You know, if that's the truth, if the truth of the matter is this guy's going into places and there's all this work for him that they're just going, yeah, you go ahead. Yeah, you go ahead. Why would you open your mouth? Man, I'd be like, yeah, hey, here's a Christmas bonus. I'm not telling anybody. That's amazing to me. Absolutely just amazing.
As we talked off air, I mean, when you get into a situation like that, management separates by destination for the most part and carrier. There's a strict code. I mean, the workers on the dock don't frivolously decide who's going to get away. It just doesn't work that way.
Oh, it doesn't?
No.
You don't mean the nice guy gets the stuff?
Let me put it to you this way. If that company operated the way he described it, they wouldn't be in business.
You know, the thing is he would call a right-wing show and they go, see, those are lazy union people. The reality is if that's happening, you're talking about a horrible management system. You're talking about a failed management system. A management system that should be fired. Incompetent. Amazing. Anyway, moving along, because we could go on about that all night long, and the reality is I think it's BS, so I'm going to be the first to call BS. So there you go. But I appreciate the call, John. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. The president is drafting an executive order that I think is a step in the right direction. He's saying, you know what, if you're gonna be a government contractor, you're going to do work for the government, you need to disclose your political donations. You need to say who you're giving money to, which of these front groups you're throwing money at. You absolutely, if you're going to be doing government work, you need to fess up. Much like unions do. You know, the weird thing about Citizens United is corporations now get to spend unlimited amounts of money and nobody gets to know where it goes. Nobody has to know. It's all secret. But unions have to spend, they have to account for every penny. There's the LM2 forms. And you have to go through and you have to let out. And during the Bush years, they those forms had better be meticulous or the feds were coming in. And I find it just amazing how folks, well, corporations should be able to do whatever they want, but those unions, we need to keep them under control. We need to keep those people under control. And here's the thing, last thing I'm going to say about John's call. If these union workers were so lazy at UPS, they wouldn't be one of the largest companies in the country and one of the most profitable companies in the country. And I ask you, when was the last time you saw a UPS guy just lounging around? Now, if you'd have called me and said it was a postal worker who was defecating in someone's front yard, I would have said, okay, maybe. Maybe that's the thing. Maybe he was going postal that day and didn't have his gun with him. I don't know. And I'm not beating up on my postal worker friends. It's just a joke. But anyway, he's drafting this legislation to say, you know, where's this political campaign money going? Just to be above boards. They're saying in all the 55 groups highlighted by the U.S. Chamber Watch, they earned a total of $44 billion in contracts in 2010. People like Lockheed Martin, who took $34 billion. People like Pfizer, who took $979 million. People like Wegmans, who took $4.5 million. A lot of these folks took a lot of money from the feds. It'd be nice to know where this campaign cash is going from. Because what's happening, and I don't know, and I don't know if you realize this, but the T-Twizzlers who came in this last election, evidently they have taken to the Washington trough like everyone else. And remember, they were going to be different. They were going to be the different folks. They were going to play a different game. But it's the same old, same old. In fact, more than 50 of the 87 GOP freshmen, they have taken in more than $50,000 apiece from PACs. In fact, some of them have gone as high as $240,000 in the first 3 months of this year. You're talking about 3 months. This one guy from Ohio, Stevers, took in $241,000 in 3 months. That, my friends, that is prolific fundraising. And you got a whole bunch of folks, one from South Dakota with 169, a woman from Tennessee with 178,000, guy from New York, 170,000. A lot of big PAC money going into their pockets, and you know what? We don't get to know who they are. It's just, one of those things. So what's going on is you got Obama on one hand saying, you know what? We want to know who's doing work for the federal government. We want to know where that money's going. We don't want our federal government money going to, to political stuff. We want you to run your business. We want your private service. But Chris Van Hollen, from Maryland, he has come out and said, you know what? going to file a lawsuit. In fact, he did it today, filing a lawsuit against the FEC to widen efforts to expose anonymous campaign donors during the 2012 election. So I'm interested to see where this is. I mean, the 2010 election. I say 2012, the 2010 election. So it'll be interesting to see where this kind of thing goes, because the Republicans, they're kind of a little quiet, because they don't want to be held to account. Because remember, what they said is they're about transparency. They're about accountability. Everything should be above board, sunlight, all that stuff, except when it comes to the campaign cash, except when it comes to who's filling the coffers. That's the interesting part here. And then, again, you know, the Tea Party has figured out, you know, how to line their pockets. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce, this first quarter of this year, has spent almost $11 million in three months on lobbying. That's a lot different from last year, when they spent $100 million all of last year. In fact, they spent in the first quarter of last year $25 million. So their lobbying is down, but then again, they're not getting all that Pfizer money. They're not getting all that big health insurance money. So basically, lobbying is down overall because, you know, you buy yourself a House of Representatives, you don't have to spend as much money on lobbying. FedEx, for instance, has cut their lobbying dramatically. They spent $3.9 million in the first 3 months compared to the $6 million they spent in the fourth quarter of 10 and the almost $5 million they spent in the first quarter of last year. Now, like our friend John said, FedEx enjoys this exemption of law that they were able to buy their way into several years ago, thanks to, you know, a couple of Democrats and a bunch of Republicans that put them under the Railway Act, made them an airline. Even though they own more trucks than they own planes, they're still considered an airline. And in order to organize those people, you have to be done all at once, and there's some bizarre stuff that goes along with that. The other part of it is most of their employees are independent contractors and it's kind of interesting, if you've noticed. They all have to wear that little purple uniform. They have to abide by rules. They drive the same kind of vehicles with the logo on the side, but they don't actually work for the company. You figure that one out, because I can't. That's what some campaign money will do for you. It will get you some exemptions like none other. Also, the big pharma people spent a boatload of money. The Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America spent a bunch of money. You got all this money going into the system. You wonder why you and I don't get a fair shake. You wonder why we have such a hard time having our voices heard on Capitol Hill. And it is. It's a lot of money. You look at the voucher thing that's going through here. You know, you get this voucher thing going on, and you look at the money that's being thrown into this SB1 coming in here to Pennsylvania. This Betsy DeVos woman lives, I guess, in Florida, I think it is, and they have spent millions of dollars pushing this voucher plan here in Pennsylvania. Why? There's big money for it. Big money. And at the end of it, it comes down to some very simple things. Some very, very simple things. There's money to be had in this. There's privatization. That's what it is. And at the end of the day, if they can take this away from us, this right to an education, we're going to suffer.
And again, it's a perfect storm for the conservative Republicans. You can satisfy your campaign donors. You can satisfy your political ideology. And at the same time, you might even get a piece of the action. It's a win-win-win for them. Unfortunately for the state, it's a lose-lose-lose.
Yep. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, you go to thericksmithshow.com, download our podcast. It's there for your entertainment, your enjoyment. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this. Stick around. Something as simple as rock and roll would save us all. Now who'd have thought that after all, it was rock and roll.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show. Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
To start taxing money made from money the same as money made from work is a common sense measure that could generate significant revenue, and we think that we should tax wealth like work.
United for a Fair Economy's Mazur Ali. He says their responsible wealth campaign wants America to return to true progressive taxation as an alternative to huge budget cuts that hurt the most vulnerable. The Responsible Wealth Campaign includes many upper-income individuals who advocate higher taxes on investment income as an alternative to slash-and-burn budgets that shred the social safety net. Taxing wealth, like work, could generate more than $80 billion a year in federal revenue.
The wealthiest people in this country are paying tax rates that are ultimately lower than most middle-class families. Because of this special treatment of capital gains and dividends, we're losing $84 billion in revenue that could be used to avoid budget cuts. It could be used as federal aid to states so that we don't have to put education and health care on the chopping block.
There's overwhelming public support nationally for taxing the rich more. A national McClatchy-Marist poll this month found 64% of Americans want to raise taxes on people making more than $250,000 a year. A year after the BP oil rig disaster in the Gulf of Mexico, very little has been done to improve worker safety on the oil rigs.
The explosion occurred about 10 o'clock on the 20th in the evening, so I didn't, or nobody knew, really knew about it until the next day. And so it was around mid-morning or noon that I got a call from my father, who was telling me about there being an explosion on Gordon's rig.
This is Chris Jones. His brother, Gordon, was one of the 11 men who were killed in the explosion at the Macondo Well in deep waters off the Louisiana coast last year. Gordon left a 2-year-old son and his wife in her final month of pregnancy. Since the start of the disaster, Jones and his father have been pushing Congress to make changes to protect workers and their families. But while the Oil Spill Commission issued criticisms and recommendations for change in January, little has been done to put those into practice. When asked for interviews about current safety practices, the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management Regulation and Enforcement, BP, and Transocean all refused. Zoe Sullivan, Workers Independent News, New Orleans.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Well, I know that somewhere down inside they're just feeling small and scared. And they need to know that someone out there cares. Have you heard a Republican today? Have you tried to spread your love?
I've been saying for some time now, you know, the Republicans want to take us back to the good old days. Remember the good old days when you didn't have to worry about retirement? You didn't have to worry about retirement because you were going to die 5 to 7 years before you were eligible for Social Security, you know, where Alan Simpson wants to take us back to. Now I'm not going to let off the weak-kneed Democrats either. They're just as bad. But this is being pushed from the radical right to make sure corporate America has enough cheap labor. And the middle class, well, that's something that I think future generations are going to read about in sci-fi books and imagine the impossible. What happened to the middle class, and how do we get it back? That's the question. That's why I've asked Isaiah Poole from the Campaign for America's Future to come talk to us a bit. Isaiah, thanks for taking time for us.
My pleasure.
You know, I look at this radical plan that the right has pretty much ram down our throats to destroy the middle class and to enrich themselves in the process. And I think they've done a pretty good job of it. What we've seen, massive wage growth at the top and stagnation in the middle.
It is extraordinary. And we posted Richard Eskow wrote a brilliant article on our site earlier this week on ourfuture.org. he called it the 12-point, the secret 12-point plan to sell pro-wealth policies to the middle class. And, you know, it's we have the plan posted on our site. We can't vouch that it was actually written by a bunch of conservatives in a secret room. But it might as well have been.
Right.
Because if you look at the steps, I mean, we've seen these things play out. We've seen the tax cuts for the rich sold as something that
stimulus.
Would benefit the middle class, and it goes on and on.
It's going to create jobs. If we cut taxes, it always creates jobs, even though it's not happened.
Well, exactly, and to the extent that, as you know, and we've said it dozens of times on this show, that to the extent that we've had jobs at all, they have been jobs that have paid lower wages than the average wages of 20 years ago, and thus the wage growth in the middle class has stagnated, if not fallen.
And, you know, I got to be honest, I'm looking at some things that I've been seeing today, the fact that Ohio Republican Rob Portman is now going to be the guy that the GOP puts out as their job czar. And Obama's job czar was no better, Jeffrey Imelt. I'm looking at these two guys, and I got to be honest, Isaiah, I'm looking at these two guys, you know, the right-wing job czar and the left-wing job czar, and both of them, their ideology is ship jobs to China.
It's appalling, and it speaks again to, I think, the need for us to have an independent jobs movement that is comprised of labor, the unemployed. One of the good things I did hear this week is that there is some organizing that's going to be happening over the next few weeks that will involve labor organizations working together with some of the people that used to be organized by organizations like Acorn, and pulling together in some of the major cities around the country, Chicago, Detroit, Washington, D.C., New York City, a couple of West Coast cities. And you're going to be seeing over the next few weeks demonstrations, teach-ins, and a lot of other activity to try to get some momentum around changing the kind of dialogue that we're having about jobs and deficits.
You know, at the end of the day, it's about building stuff. I don't care where your plan begins or ends. It's about building stuff, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely.
The crumbling bridges we've got is a good place to start.
Well, you know, which is why it's very unfortunate that, you know, one of the things that happened in the 2011 budget is that we actually cut money for transportation. It's one of the last things that we should do at a time when we have surplus labor and a desperate need for improvements in our highway and our mass transit systems.
You know, and what bothers me, and we've had this conversation in the past, is all I keep hearing coming out of Washington and here in Harrisburg is this frame that we need to cut. We need to cut spending. We need to cut at all costs. We need to cut social programs. We need to raise the retirement age for Social Security. We need to do all of these things, except we don't need to raise revenue. We don't need to bring more money into the system because, as the T-Twizzlers tell us, we're taxed enough already, even though we were at the lowest level of taxation in 60 years.
But I think the one, you know, we've had we did our own poll working with Stan Greenberg at Democracy Corps. And in our own polling, we found that tax increases for people who earn more than $250,000 is very popular. An ABC News Washington Post poll, I think, made the same point this week. So, I mean, I have yet to see a poll in which raising taxes on a credible poll in which raising taxes on people earning more than $250,000 a year was unpopular. And yet I heard Eric Cantor on television just yesterday do this really sly pivot when you mention raising taxes on the rich, he immediately changes the conversation and talks about small businesses, which is irrelevant because we're not talking about small. We're not talking about the guy who runs the, for the most part, we're not talking about the guy who runs the corner store. If we had ended the Bush tax cuts for the wealthy, something like 97% of the small businesses in this country would still be under the Bush tax cuts for people earning less than $250,000, the ones that Obama pledged to keep. So only about 3% of people were classified as small businesses would have seen a tax increase if we had let that cap go.
Right.
So the conversation about small business is a red herring.
Oh, absolutely. It's the shiny thing in the room. It's the thing to get people to focus on something else. I mean, Michelle Bachmann had a doozy of one comment the other day where she said, well, you know, we could take all the wealth from the top 400 people and it would only fund the government for half a year. That's an awful lot of money.
Well, that is an awful lot of money. But we don't need to do that. Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky has a proposal, a bill.
Which I think is a good one.
Which is a very good bill, and it would take you up to a 49% tax rate for really the ultra millionaires. I mean, we're talking about people who are in eight, nine, and ten figures. But take them up to a 49% tax rate. Back in the Eisenhower era, those people paid a 90% tax rate.
Yep, 92% was the top marginal rate in 1955.
Right. So nobody's talking not even the 92%, but 49% for someone who is on income over, say, $10 million. I think given the state of our economy, given the state of our deficit, we need to do that.
Well, especially if they keep pushing this frame that we need shared sacrifice. Because I got to be honest, the top 25 hedge fund managers who in 2009 made $1 billion apiece and this past year made $850 million apiece and only paid 15% flat capital gains tax, I'm sorry, I'm not seeing the shared sacrifice. I'm just not.
Well, here's the thing. I crunched some numbers from the Internal Revenue Service. And one of the things that was interesting that I discovered in doing that was that the 400 top taxpayers in the country between, I believe it's 1987 and within the past two decades, their average tax rate dropped 53%. The top 400.
Right.
You and me, our tax rate dropped about 6%. Our average tax rate. They got an average of 52% less of a tax hit.
Yeah, but
I mean,
Isaiah,
that's incredible.
Isaiah, you're just jealous. I mean, now you're talking class war. You just want to soak the rich.
Well, I don't want to soak the rich. What I want to do is say to those who have not that shared sacrifice means shared sacrifice. And those who have the capacity to carry the load, and actually those who have benefited the most from the economy, benefited the most from the fact that we have an education system, benefited the most from the fact that we have a transportation, a public public highways and public transit, those who benefit the most from the research that we do, that have brought us the internet, that have brought us, all of the things that we enjoy, those people we should ask them to, you know what gets me upset?
Tell me, what gets you upset?
When President Bush sent us to war in Iraq, and instead of saying to us, as was done in World War II, instead of saying to us, well, look, if this war is important, we got to pay for it. And instead of doing that, he put it on a Chinese credit card. And now we're going to ask seniors and people who are in the poor and middle class to give up what little they have so that we can pay off that credit card bill that Bush ran up.
Well, even worse,
I think it's insidious.
even worse than the credit card that they ran up. They told us to just go out and go shopping. The only sacrifice we need from you is go out and go shopping. Maybe put a sticker on the back of your car, but go shopping.
Go shopping. Buy some cheese-made goods.
At the end of all of this, and I think the Chinese made goods thing is the point, at the end of this, we need to do some sane rational around our bizarre trade deficits and these policies that even, you know, I like President Obama. This thing with North Korea, Colombia, and Panama, really just more bad ideas.
Well, I that's true, and the AFL-CIO is definitely ringing some alarm bells about the Colombia deal that they don't like. We are going to be ringing some alarm bells about that. The one thing that we really, one of the things that concerns me is Donald Trump, and he's gotten out there and he's talking about the 25. He's using a lot of this rhetoric, which really, again, is a distraction from what we need to do. You made the point that we need to build things. And we need to make things. And we need to, one of the things that we can use is the power of our spending, of our government spending, to encourage manufacturing. That was one of the reasons why the high-speed rail money was important.
Right.
Because when you have those dollars out there, what do? You're not only building rail cars, but you're also building the parts that go into rail cars. And those parts won't only just go in those rail cars, but they will go into other things that we're manufacturing that we need. There are electronics that spin off from that, and on it goes. And then when you have that manufacturing base, then you have R&D that feeds it. So those dollars were, the right wants to characterize that spending as a frivolity, when in fact it is very essential, a very important key in sort of rebuilding our manufacturing capacity.
Yep. Last question before we wrap this up. You know, what's coming up for you guys in the coming months? You guys always put on a great conference. What can we look forward to?
Well, one of the things that first of all, we really need to get some solid messaging around the debt limit fight, and we're going to be working on that over the next few weeks. Our conference, by the way, is going to be in October, and there's not a lot that I can say about that conference right now, but when I promise you that I'm going to come back on the air in not too long from now. And I'm going to have a real exciting announcement about the conference that we will be doing in early October.
So I look forward to it, and we look forward to being there for the conference. You guys always do a great job, and it's always great to be there and bring our audience what's going on there.
Well, thank you very much.
All right, Isaiah, I appreciate your time. Have a great holiday weekend. Thanks so much.
You too.
Isaiah Poole, our good friend over at the Campaign for America's Future. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Back after this.
Defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
House Speaker John Boehner, Majority Leader Eric Cantor, and Budget Chairman Paul Ryan like to portray themselves as the three budgeteers. Decrying deficits, the GOP's sharp-eyed slashers of federal spending are galloping through Congress with swords flashing, severing billions, nay, trillions, from the national budget. Medicare for seniors, behead it. Food stamps for the poor, whack 'em. Environmental protections, eviscerate 'em. Consumer agency, kill it. Practically all of the slash and burn rampage by the three budgeteers comes at the expense of America's middle class and the poor. For corporate powers and the wealthy elites, however, the dynamic trio offers more governmental gimmies, including a one-third cut in their tax rates. The budgeteers are also demanding that government workers take cutbacks.
But wait, aren't Boehner, Cantor, and Ryan workers too? Well, yes, but very special workers. So when they recently took our government to the brink of a total shutdown, guess who they rushed to protect? Not emergency responders, toxic waste cleanup crews, air traffic controllers, or millions of other federal employees we count on, but themselves. In the Senate, Barbara Boxer had passed a bill to suspend the paychecks of all Congress critters if the government shuts down, but the three budgeteers blocked it in the House, thus protecting the $174,000 a year that each lawmaker sucks from us taxpayers. But then, the GOP threesome cynically tried to trick the public about their perfidy. They made a show of approving a House version of the congressional pay suspension, but tucked it into a bill with zero chance of passing. This is Jim Hightower saying, Boehner, Cantor, Ryan, remember those names. They think they're clever, and they are hoping that you are stupid.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Our tweet of the day is, I always refer to it as Lesser Carolina, where stupid goes to die. I didn't write it. It's the tweet of the day, though. So that should make our friend Ike very happy. Anyway, the big decision, since we're talking about South Carolina, the big decision has come down from one of Mr. Solomon, what is he? He's the administrative, help me here.
LRB.
He's the NLRB, but there's a type. General counsel, that's it. General counsel of the NLRB came out with his decision, basically, and if I get this right, in 2007, Boeing said they were going to make seven of these 787 Dreamliner airplanes per month in the state of Washington. Now, the Machinist Union represents those workers. And to do this, they were going to have to add a second production line to make three more per month. In October 2009, the company then came out and said it had decided to make that second line in South Carolina. And they told the employees that it was because they had gone on strike in the past in Washington State. This is the company executives who have said this. Now, and a senior Boeing official said in a videotaped interview with the Seattle Times newspaper, quote, the overriding factor in transferring the lines was not the business climate. It was not the wages we were paying. It was that we cannot afford to have work stoppages, you know, every 3 years. So what this general counsel guy says, look, the law of the country is that a worker has the fundamental right to go on strike. It is guaranteed under the National Labor Relations Act. So coming out and saying the only reason we are moving these lines is because we want to take this right away from those workers, to me, is a violation of the law. So now you got Jim DeMint who's coming out and losing his mind, the senator from South Carolina. They're saying this is nothing more than a political favor for unions, without really understanding that the law guarantees workers that right. And just because, you know, South Carolina is a backward state, who basically they seem to love this idea that you can be discarded at any time. It kind of makes me cringe that in this country we haven't learned the lessons of the past. It's just amazing stuff. So we'll see where this goes. This isn't done. It's going to be appealed. Boeing will appeal it. It will then end up in court, and it'll be interesting to see where this ends up, because this could be a huge case.
And I don't know if you mentioned, I don't think you did, but some of the information I got, the Boeing workers offered Boeing an 11-year agreement. And apparently, that wasn't enough for him.
Well, no, I mean, because you got Nikki Haley, which I still think is a great porn name. You know, if there's one thing South Carolina's got going for it, it's got a lot of porn. You got the guy who's running around on the Appalachian Trail, otherwise known as the hot woman from Argentina. And now this one with the, you know.
Well, as in any industry, but especially in this industry, that gives them very much stability because they can project costs. 11 years is a long, long. I mean, quite frankly, I've never heard one that long. But that was, you know, that had to be. Labor unions are very adamant to do that, and that was a big concession, but it wasn't enough apparently.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, though. Anyway, this will end up in court, and we'll see how this goes. And we talk to our good friend Irwin Aronson next week. We'll bring this up and see what his thoughts on it are. I'm sure he'll have a thought on it or two. Anyway, according to Reuters, a U.S. federal agency has sued over unequal treatment of more than 500 workers from India recruited to work at shipyards in Mississippi and Texas, and over 200 Thai farm laborers who were brought to Hawaii and Washington State, according to officials yesterday. The U.S. Equal Employment Opportunities Commission, the EEOC, said the workers were forced to live in substandard housing and exploited with fees, so that some had net earnings of almost nothing. You know, not too long ago, you know, we had someone come around and say, look, you know, there's a company doing that here, right here in Pennsylvania, putting us in one of these packing places, charging huge fees, large rent, and basically what they're earning is nothing. They're just surviving. So I find it interesting. Again, you know, this is what happens when you don't have a sane, rational immigration policy. When you have all these work visas that you allow people to have and apply for, and really not control. The guy who's in trouble, his name's Mordecai Orion. And what he's done is he's gone. He's recruited a bunch of these Thai workers to go on the farms. And what they're saying is just in horrible conditions. Now, his lawyer's saying, no. Look, they're not horrible conditions. Understand where they're horrible by American standards, sure. But not where they're from. You know, where they're from, you know, Thailand, it's really bad. So even here, it's a step up. And it's an interesting argument in that, yeah, maybe you did inch their standard of living up a little bit. But what you've done by allowing that to happen in this country is you're pulling the rest of us down. So I go back to my FedEx buddy who called a minute ago. And I think about that. By having laws where FedEx and UPS are competing on different playing fields, under different laws, that gives FedEx a competitive advantage. The fact that they can exploit their workforce. And the guy was quite happy. He was happy to be exploited. He says he's making a middle-class living probably about 30% less than the union guy's making. And I didn't ask him, and next time he calls, and I'm sure he will, I'll ask him, you know, what would you do for one of those jobs? I'm sure he'd say he wouldn't want it. Because why would you want to make more money and have better benefits and have security? Why would you want that? just plain dumb. Makes no sense at all. Makes no sense at all. Anyway, when we come back, we're going to talk to our friend Roxanne Pauline. She was out at that rally today. And look, you know, I go back to this rally, and to me, it's symbolic. It is really symbolic in that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, or as I call them, the GOP hit squad, that terrorist group thought it was okay to come into an area where, you know, where labor history is rich with battles and blood and sacrifice, and have their little assassination training film and do their little training camp to destroy working conditions and take people's rights away. They thought it was okay to do it here. You know what they were met with? They were met with about 100 and some citizens who had their voices heard. And that, my friends, is what democracy looks like. We're back after this.
No. work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask Me Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, Ask Me Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make everything happen!
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. I've got Roxanne Pauline on the line. She's the Northeast Pennsylvania Area Labor Federation coordinator. Was up there today for the big rally, and it really was. I mean, it was a spectacular event, and good for the folks up there. Roxanne, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, no problem at all. I'm glad to be here. It was an incredible day in Schuylkill County, that's for sure.
You guys did an amazing thing there. And you know, what I said in the beginning of the program is, I think what it shows is the arrogance and how emboldened the International Chamber of Commerce has gotten, that they're willing to send one of their terror trainers into a place that really is rich with labor history.
That's right, and we had over 100 people show up there from USW, from SEIU, from USCW, from AFSCME, from Sheet Metal, CWA. It was a great event. Hundreds of people were there. Inside, unfortunately, for the Chamber of Commerce, there was only 22.
And a couple of them were you and some other union folks.
Me and Yael went in, and Tommy, and there were a few of us there. It was a very, very interesting morning, I could say that.
So, you know, in looking at this, and I got to be honest, you know, I'm sure that the mainstream media would, had they shown up, would have looked at it and said, so look at all these union thugs hanging around. To me, it was just a bunch of citizens wanting to have their voice heard.
Well, that's exactly what it was. It was citizens showing how they feel. And when we got on the inside, we talked, and I didn't disguise myself or say that we were anybody else. I said, I'm with the AFL-CIO, and, you know, we want to hear what you have to say. And we were greeted with, well, we want to be fair. Everybody wants to be fair. You know, this is something you have to do to all be fair. And I must have heard that a million times. Ted's speech went on to encompass things that are probably not fair for labor. They have an agenda that they call our Plan B, that we have a plan to get everybody and build this up, and it's our political agenda. It's pro-labor's political agenda to get executive orders voted on by Congress so that we can put small businesses out of business. And
Hold on. What's the point of putting the businesses out of business?
I'm not really sure.
Because if you don't have any businesses, you don't have any members. If you don't have
exactly.
any members,
you don't have any people. You don't have any anything. You know, and the reason we're organizing is so we can just follow that political agenda that we have.
Mm.
And it really became all about promoting their political agenda. It had nothing to do with working families, retirement, pensions. It was all about us just trying to gain members, steal their money away from them without them really knowing very much about it, and, you know, go after our agenda, which I thought was reasonably amusing. He said the overall reason for the seminar was to inform people. And the people that were there obviously are very uninformed because they have no idea what labor is all about. He said that, you know, we're pushing government regulations, and that is hurting business.
Are you?
And go ahead.
Are you pushing government regulations?
I personally am not. I'm trying to get people jobs and back to work and trying to do the right thing and stop 51 nurses from getting tossed out in Schuylkill County.
If he means by, you know, promoting safety on the job, if he means promoting minimum wage and you know, protecting maximum hour law stuff, if he means that, then, yeah, I guess that is the labor agenda, but I think that's the American agenda.
It sure should be. As far as OSHA goes, he was very upset about hiring more people and being more aggressive, and the reason that OSHA is doing that is to hurt businesses. You know, that they're cracking down on independent contractors so labor can't build up their labor pools anymore, and all kinds of rhetoric that you would naturally expect. Now, they toned it down because we were in the room. I can't quite imagine what would be said had we not been in the room.
It must have been quite of an education, because I, you know, I find when I'm in, around those kind of folks, and they do, you know, say their piece. When you move down the road, their arguments all break down on very simple rational arguments of fairness that they seem to want to promote.
Well, you're right. You're absolutely right. It just was an experience. One of the one points that they made is. Public sector workers like AFSCME should not be allowed to be organized because that's the taxpayers' money.
Yeah, and because Franklin Roosevelt said so.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's exactly what he said. And you know Franklin Roosevelt said so. Exactly what he said.
But, you know, here's the thing, and there's part of me that goes, maybe Roosevelt did say that, but I don't think he imagined that they would be treated as poorly as they were in years to come.
Well, one of the comments that Tommy at our table had made was, well, one of the reasons that AFSCME has grown the way it is because you can't export government jobs to China, which is the truth. At that point, he kind of cut that part of the discussion off.
Yeah.
He said that the political arm of labor will not go away because it's labor's goal, and it's only labor's goal is to have more people to gain more money so we can fund our campaigns.
I guess that's what it's all about. It's not about the middle class. It's not about not about more of the pie. It's about power. It's about political power. Wow.
That's what, you know, and, you know, I wish we had as much political power. I fight every day to try to keep gaining more power because sometimes I see us losing badly. You know, they talked about PLAs. They talked about the deck poster, which I thought was rather interesting. That's that piece of paper that was an executive order. That hangs in all the workplaces. And he said that the executive order Obama made with the new poster makes it look exclusively like a pro-union poster, that it has no reasons on it not to join the union, which I just thought was one of those silly things that most people will take away and go, oh, you see that poster? That just says join the union, and that's bad. We don't want to hang that in our workplace.
Yeah, like that poster that talks about the minimum wage. Yeah, we're pro-minimum wage. That's all we want to make.
Yep, that's it. And there was a gentleman in there who owned several McDonald's, and he was very, very proud of the fact that he had hired a lot of people over the weekend. They had a big McDonald's hiring frenzy, yeah. And that for whatever the minimum wage is right now, he hired them, and I'm sure they're going to have a very lovely and sustainable life working at McDonald's. Because they're not all children going there now. There's just about everybody headed for any job they could get. Because one thing that's missing in this country is jobs. We're not trying to hurt businesses. We're trying to build businesses, and we're trying to have unions and jobs and democracy for all of America. I was appalled by some of the things that went on today, but it was very interesting and amusing.
And eye-opening. You know, I go back to something Samuel Gomper said, the founder of the AFL, who said, you know, it should be criminal that a corporation doesn't run at a profit.
Right.
You know, if something's that poorly managed, it should be criminal. And
well, it should be criminal. And the fact to say that AFSCME workers should not have the right to organize because they work for the government and that's taxpayers' money is insane. It just makes no sense whatsoever at all. You're working for money, and who you choose to be part of an organization with or make your alliance with becomes your business. Not all AFSCME workers are organized.
But here's the thing, Roxanne. Don't you remember when those greedy teachers and those overpaid, lazy state workers crashed the economy? Don't you remember that?
Oh, I remember that. Those terrible, lazy teachers, the ones that we're having here in Scranton, I think we're going to have about 800 or 900 of them this coming Saturday coming out with their children to talk about how lazy and bad they are on Easter Saturday.
And how they crashed the economy.
Yes, and it's a horrible, horrible thing that we've been doing. You know, just trying to stay alive, keep the electric on, eat, drive a car, and fill that tank with gas that's now costing my little four-cylinder $50.
Wow.
You know, it's just amazing what happened. But today's event was eye-opening, and the amount of people that came out and were truly dedicated to the cause of fighting for their rights to have a job and to have a middle-class life. They've taken the middle class out of America, and we need to bring it back, and this is our time to do it. If we don't do it now, I'm not so sure we're ever going to get another chance, at least not in my lifetime.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Roxanne, it was great seeing you, and it was great seeing all the folks up there. It was a terrific event, and again, you know, next time, as I said when I spoke, next time bring 1,000 people, and I say shut the entire street down so the event just never happens.
Well, it came close to that at that event, that they were kind of shutting the street down. Unfortunately for the chamber, not a lot of people were overly interested in being there.
Yeah.
But the fact that these things are going on throughout the country just makes me so angry. And if I could be at every single solitary one of them and these crowds could be at every one, that would be a beautiful thing for our movement.
I'm right there with you. Roxanne, I appreciate your time. Great talking to you. Keep up the great work up there, and I hope to talk to you again real soon.
Okay, thank you, Rick.
Thank you. You know, I look at this, and again, you know, it was a great event, and they've done a great job up there, and it was great. If I can use the word again, because there's just nothing else to say. We're gonna take a quick break. When we come back, your calls 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Time to talk.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call them at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Yes, I'm grocery, they are hazies. Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Everything's raisin.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. A Dearborn, Michigan jury evidently is going to be deciding tomorrow if the insaniac Florida pastor Terry Jones will be able to hold his rally in front of a Michigan mosque. He's been asked to post a peace bond, which he has refused. So they're going to have a six-person jury decide whether he's going to have to do this. Now, you know, Jones is the lead loony at the Dove World Outreach Center. I've seen reports that put his membership in the handfuls. So, you know, real big congregation going on there. Here's the reason behind all this. Honestly, this is at the end of the day, this is what it's about. The church has a website, and it's going to hawk some crummy book he wrote, probably in pencil, called Islam is of the Devil. Islam is of the Devil. And on the website, you can buy your Islam is the Devil t-shirts, and your Islam is the Devil ball caps, and your Islam is the Devil mugs, and whatever else they can find some sucker to buy. And that's what it's about. It's about lining his pockets. This is him being a little entrepreneurial. But according to reports, Mr. Jones is a former hotel manager who was previously thrown out of a church that he had led in Germany. How bad do you have to be thrown out of a church in Germany? How bad do you have to be? Anyway, BP is back again there after yesterday, the year anniversary yesterday, which killed 11 people a year ago yesterday. BP is... Yeah, back to donating money to John Boehner and to House Energy Committee Chairman Fred Upton. Again, you know, the campaign money keeps a flowing. Amazing stuff. And you know, at some point we've got to put a stop to this. Anyway, let's go to the phone lines. I've got our good friend Ike on the line. How are we doing tonight, Ike?
Hey, Rick, I don't know. I've just been yucking it up. I've been listening to the tape of the recordings of the people at the Tea Party here in South Carolina.
Is it true that South Carolina is where stupid goes to die?
I'm telling you, brother, these people are some, I don't know. I don't know if it's all this nuclear waste that's in the water or I don't know what the hell's wrong with these folks. But, I mean, I went through a culture shock when I moved from Atlanta to here, and I've just been kind of, I don't know, it's like a black hole vortex because I've been stuck here for about 5-6 years now. I haven't been able to get out of here.
You need bus fare, I'll help you out.
Well, no, actually, I think I've just been hunkered down waiting for everything to blow over. I figured the economy would have turned over by now, you know.
Yeah.
But, I'm never surprised, you know, I have to admit, you know, And don't get me wrong, I've been up in your neck of the woods too there, pal. I lived in Pittsburgh for a while.
Yeah, I'm sorry for that.
Well, I'm just saying, you folks have got your share of hillbilly rednecks too, you know?
Yes, we do.
But, no, it's amazing, you know, where do you get your news? Fox News, who do you look, you know, to for your information? Glenn Beck, you know, it just shows, and you've got to hand it to these people. I mean, the Republicans, you know, I warned the Democrats a long time ago before this ever got turned into the monster that it is, and they didn't pick up it, you know, didn't pick up and run with it. I told them, so I said, you guys better get on the air, and you better do something about this, and they just let Rush and all these other guys balloon out there and build this network. And now if you look, I can promise you most of the red states, they don't have anything but right-wing talk radio.
I would say even the blue states have nothing but right-wing talk radio. Look at the city of Philadelphia. Look at the city of Philadelphia. They have got two solidly conservative, top to bottom, front to back, conservative talk stations, no progressive talk station at all.
No, I find them hard. No, I keep getting them. It's tougher and tougher for me to call anything about the Republican Party conservative. I just don't see them as being that.
Okay, well, let me help you then. They have one that is just right wing. That's your Limbaugh, that's your Hannity. And then they've got the, oh, my God, they're insane, radical, extreme right wing. The Huey Hewitts and the Cunninghams and the people who are way out on the fringe. So you've got crazy,
right.
And then, oh, my God, crazy.
Yeah, it's sad, you know. But there again, you know, I keep saying to people, too, you know, the big hope is with the proliferation of smartphones, you know, people can find their way out in the wilderness. By the way, just so you know, that's where I listen to you. I got you on the TuneIn app on my Android.
Oh, good.
But just so you know where I'm coming from, I'm in the 6th District here in Charleston. And the 6th District is the one that put Clyburn in. Mm. And we're the only county or the only district that carried for Obama in the whole state. So we're kind of like the Austin of Texas, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
We're surrounded. But I still say the solution is just keep feeding them the rope and let them hang themselves. And for all your listeners out there, if you want a real hoot and you want to hear how the fresh hell that I live in, just go listen to some of that recording of these idiots they had off up there at the Capitol, because I'm telling you. It's hard to believe anybody could be proud of being that stupid. You know what I'm saying?
I hear you. I absolutely hear you, Ike.
And by the way, one other thing, too. I don't know if you've been seeing any of these town hall meetings with Obama.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, I don't want to hear any more of this mess coming out of his mouth about compromise. And I don't want to hear the same recycled stuff that I've heard before. He needs to get fresh. He needs to get bold. And he needs to get on the move. Because from what I've seen, we don't want to hear you were stuck with the deficit. We don't want to hear. We know all that. You're talking to your voters here. And the people that he better pay attention to besides the Democratic base is he better pray to God that the independents will back him, because if they don't, then he's probably going to go down in flames.
Well, don't you think the independents want to hear that compromise talk? At the end of the day, you and I have nowhere else to go. I'm not going to vote for a Republican, not these crazy Republicans. So it's those folks in the middle that he's trying to appease, that he's trying to get, and I understand it. I don't like it, but I understand that he's trying to show that he's the adult in the room and he's willing to make some compromise and meet the Republicans halfway, knowing that the Republicans are not going to budge.
Well, I'm sure there's a method for a strategy, but I'm just saying, from what I've seen of his compromises, there's some things that you just can't compromise on. And, you know, I'm worried, like a lot of other folks, that, he's going to bend too far over backwards for him. And the next thing you know, we're going to have trouble. But beyond that, I'm an independent to the point that I'll tell you right now, if he thinks he's going to run an amnesty program, he's out of his mind, because there's people out here, particularly, construction workers and a lot of workers that have been displaced by those folks, that continue to see them taking over whole communities and changing the whole shooting match and doing as they please, killing people on the highways and all the mess they get away with. And they're just fed up. They're beyond fed up with that. And so, I've got no choice. I've got to be independent, because I can't take either party on, on everything.
Right. Well, but, I'm there with you.
As far as it goes, though, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's not like I'm going to go that crap crazy and vote for something off the Republican side.
I've often thought of, you know, I wouldn't mind, there's part of me wouldn't mind seeing Michelle Bachmann in the White House. I'd get to see her every day.
I'm praying Trump and the rest of that zoo crew, you know, the craziest ones they've got, I hope they run. It'll be entertaining at the very least.
Absolutely. That's why we play the game. Ike, I appreciate the call, brother. Thank you so much.
Have a good night, y'all.
You too. Michelle Bachmann to me is comedy gold. I mean, sitting in this chair, I mean, look, there's two ways I look at this. One is a citizen of the country where I want to see the best for the country. I want to see us move in the right direction. And then there's the part of what I do for a living, which is sitting behind this microphone and looking at what's in front of me. And having a Palin Santorum ticket would be pure gold. Having a Donald Trump Bachmann ticket or a Bachmann Trump ticket would be pure gold. I don't think it's going to be that, but it's going to be a nice fight because we're working on getting up to the New Hampshire primaries because I think that is going to be fun. It's going to be fun seeing crazy people trying to out nuts each other.
Michelle, she's a piece of work. I mean, she'll look. I mean, I got to laugh just thinking about it. She'll look straight in that corner in that camera and with her eyes blinking as honest as she can be. And she says something totally inaccurate and totally untrue. And she does that time after time. And the irony is you think you've heard the worst out of her, and she trumps that.
You haven't heard anything yet. I love it. I absolutely love it. Anyway, you remember hearing too long ago, Sam Smith, who was a state representative here in Pennsylvania, said that he wanted 50 fewer members in the House in 10 years. He wanted to take the House down from 203 to 253. I look at that and I go, well, you know, it may sound like a great idea on one hand, but it's a horrible idea for representation. And then I started thinking about things. And I see in Indiana that they've just passed this anti-bolting law that the Republicans have rammed through 36-0. Pretty much without the Democrats, that if the legislature leaves, anyone leaves the state like they did for several weeks, that they'll be fined and that they can be sued and all of this stuff. And, you know, you look at what's going on in Michigan, you look at what Wisconsin's talking about doing, having these financial martial law, if you will, appointing these czars. And I kind of go back to Sam Smith here with his idea of just cutting it by 50. I go, why not just cut 203, cut the state Senate by 50, so you don't have either one. You don't need them. We've got a king now. We've got King Walker and King Kasich and King Snyder who they'll make the decisions for us. We don't need oversight. That oversight thing, that's really overrated. That transparency thing, oh, come on. Nobody really wants that. That accountability, really? Do you think anybody really wants that? And the answer is no.
Well, the irony is they think they're, and I'm being serious here, I know you're being facetious, but when you analyze the issue, here's the irony. They think they're reformers, Rick. But what you're doing is putting much more power in the hands of fewer and fewer people, which it goes against every grain of fairness and democracy that you want to use as a barometer.
But they are reforming. They're reforming us right back before the 20th century. They're reforming us back to the Gilded Age. That's where the reform is taking us. You know, reform may be a good thing. Quite often it's a bad thing. When they start talking about change, no one changed this country more than George W. Bush. And none of it for the good. And I kept saying that during the 2008 election. You know, change is a great thing if it's in the right direction. But Bush took us down a road that changed this country in ways that I don't think anyone could have ever imagined. And, you know, like when we were talking last night to Russ Baker, you know, at the end of the day, what happened is they got their plan pushed through during the Bush years because they were able to use 9/11. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come right back after this.
I'll be working as long as my two hands are fit to use. I'll drink my beer in a tavern, sing a little bit of these working men.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red. Dick Smith.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
To start taxing money made from money the same as money made from work is a common sense measure that could generate significant revenue, then we think that we should tax wealth like work.
United for a Fair Economy's Mazur Ali. He says their Responsible Wealth campaign wants America to return to true progressive taxation as an alternative to huge budget cuts that hurt the most vulnerable. The Responsible Wealth campaign includes many upper-income individuals who advocate higher taxes on investment income as an alternative to slash-and-burn budgets that shred the social safety net. Taxing wealth, like work, could generate more than $80 billion a year in federal revenue.
The wealthiest people in this country are paying tax rates that are ultimately lower than most middle-class families. Because of this special treatment of capital gains and dividends, we're losing $84 billion in revenue that could be used to avoid budget cuts. It could be used as federal aid to states so that we don't have to put education and health care on the chopping block.
There's overwhelming public support nationally for taxing the rich more. A national McClatchy-Marist poll this month found 64% of Americans want to raise taxes on people making more than $250,000 a year. A year after the BP oil rig disaster in the Gulf of Mexico, very little has been done to improve worker safety on the oil rigs.
The explosion occurred about 10 o'clock on the 20th in the evening, so I didn't, or nobody knew really knew about it until the next day. And so it was around mid-morning or noon that I got a call from my father who was telling me about there being an explosion on Gordon's rig.
This is Chris Jones. His brother, Gordon, was one of the 11 men who were killed in the explosion at the Macondo Well in deep waters off the Louisiana coast last year. Gordon left a 2-year-old son and his wife in her final month of pregnancy. Since the start of the disaster, Jones and his father have been pushing Congress to make changes to protect workers and their families. But while the Oil Spill Commission issued criticisms and recommendations for change in January, little has been done to put those into practice. When asked for interviews about current safety practices, the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management Regulation and Enforcement, BP, and Transocean all refused.
Zoe Sullivan, Workers Independent News, New Orleans.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Official supporter of Palin Santorum 2012, The Rick Smith Show.
We're going to have to change that if Palin and Santorum actually are the ticket. I think we're going to have to change that because I don't know that we can actually endorse anyone. But, you know, it's kind of a comic thing. It's right there. So nice job. Anyway, since Paul Ryan has brought his path to prosperity out, again, I think most people have realized that these folks are kooky and they're taking us way off onto the wrong path. He's had a town hall meeting where I guess most of the people there were supporters, at least I think they were, and when conversation came up, they booed him. Interesting stuff. So we've asked the guy who was there who actually did the videotape, Scott Kies, a researcher over at Think Progress, to come talk to us about what's going on there in Wisconsin, especially with Paul Ryan. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thanks, Rick. And before we get started, you know, you might be supporting Palin Santorum in 2012, but I'm throwing my lot in with Trump Bachman. I think that's the winning ticket.
See, now I had it the other way. I had Bachman Trump because I don't think Trump can lead the ticket.
Fair enough. It's hard to see him playing second fiddle, but, you know, I'll take it any way I can get it.
And to be honest, I don't think Bachman would let anyone on top. So, now there you go. Now you're taking me down the wrong path.
My apologies.
That's all right. The video, great job, by the way. The video of Paul Ryan having a town hall meeting where, you know, not all the love that I think he was expecting.
No, that's exactly right. in this video, one of his constituents gets up to ask him a question. You know, he starts out saying, you know, like you, Congressman Ryan, I am a lifelong conservative. You know, I voted for you, and et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, we've seen such immense income inequality in this country, and that was really one of the major precursors both for the Great Depression in the 1920s and 30s and the Great Recession we're seeing now. So, you know, given that, how can you be defending these tax breaks for the wealthy? You know, which is an extremely reasonable question.
Seems rational to me.
Especially, yeah, when, you know, when Congressman Ryan is proposing such major cuts to the social safety net in the name of deficit reduction, and yet he's willing to give away all this money to the rich.
And they booed him when he tried to answer that he was against it, right?
That's exactly right. You know, he his constituent asked, you know, very fairly, how can you defend this? And then Paul Ryan's response was, well, you know, we do tax the top, you know, which is just kind of an answer I think that doesn't really jive with a lot of people very well, given that they're being asked to make such major sacrifices to close this budget deficit, but the rich are getting a handout.
Yeah, I got to be honest. You know, I've loved some of the talking points recently that have come out. The AP story that, you know, half the country pays no taxes, half the country pays no federal taxes, and that the super, you know, the very wealthy, you know, they pay 60% of all the taxes. You know, that may be true. I mean, the very wealthy may pay that large amount of the taxes, but that's because they've got that much money.
Well, yeah, I mean, you look at income inequality in the United States from 1980 to 2005, 80% of the growth in income went to the wealthiest Americans in the country. I mean, there's talk of a growing extended economy, but what we're seeing is that you know, growth in terms of income is really being just going to the richest 1 or 2% in the country. You know, the middle class folks, the kind of heart of the country, aren't really seeing those gains. And I think that's why you're seeing a lot of this frustration at these town halls.
Well, yeah, and, you know, I got to be honest. You know, I remember the Tea Party town halls back during 2010, during that election cycle. I was hoping that the Tea Party would hold these Tea Party Republicans accountable for not doing what they said they were going to do. We're seeing that, you know, the Tea Party people are just as bad as the ones they replaced with being deep into the campaign donors' pockets.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think a lot of Tea Partiers would claim to be, and Tea Party congressmen claim to be, you know, these big populists looking out for the will of the people. And yet, as myself and my colleague Lee Fong go around and interview these congressmen, for instance, about the you know, corporate tax breaks and loopholes that companies like GE and Bank of America are getting, they're not willing to stand up to them. You know, they're happy to take their checks. They're happy to keep maintaining these loopholes and tax breaks. They're not willing to stand up to these corporations who are, frankly, bilking a lot, you know, and taking away a lot of the revenue from the federal government that, you know, folks like you and I are ended up having to cover the bill.
Yeah, when you were at this town hall meeting that Paul Ryan had, what would you say the breakdown was between supporters and maybe people who weren't so supportive of him? Was there anyone crazy, like, you know, here in Pennsylvania, you had the guy screaming at Arlen Specter? Did you have any of that, or were they mostly supporters?
It didn't quite get to that level. I mean, you know, it's Wisconsin nice up there and all. But I'll tell you what's interesting. You know, I've been going to these town halls for about a year now, and typically the people who tend to show up are really fervent supporters of that congressman or senator. But in this particular instance, going to 4, 5, 6 of these town halls for Congressman Ryan, that wasn't the case at all. It was probably, I'd say, about 50-50 in terms of people who were very clearly supporting and then people who had, you know, major reservations about his budget and some of his plans for Medicare and obviously tax breaks for the wealthy. But, you know, to put that number in context, most of the town halls I go to, it's something like 95% in favor of that particular congressman. So I think that really speaks to a lot of the anxiety and unease that his constituents have with his plan. And, you know, and if he can't even convince his own constituents to be supporting this plan, it's going to have a tough time trying to convince the rest of America.
Well, I think, and again, you know, when I look at this, this is a massive overreach. The Republicans voted in favor 235-4 to basically destroy Medicare. And how do to me, that is a massive overreach.
I'll tell you, there was a recent poll out. There was a poll I believe the day before yesterday that showed that something in the mid-80s, four out of every five Americans did not want to see these types of cuts happen to Medicare. They did not want to see Medicare phased out. They didn't want to see it privatized. They didn't want to see these cuts happen to it. They're fine with it the way it is. What's even more interesting is that when you look at another poll, it's 70% of Tea Partiers wanted to see Medicare preserved the way it is. So, you know, this isn't even an issue that Tea Partiers are on board with. I have trouble imagining how Paul Ryan is expecting to convince the rest of America, especially when he can't even convince the fringe of his own party.
You know, at the end of this was, I do believe, this was just another one of those things that came out of the Heritage Foundation, that they go, okay, here's the next part of the big game plan. Go take this out there. You carry the torch and see where it leads. And I think it's going to take a beating, because even with the caveat that they've added, it's just going to affect those people 55 and younger. You older folks, you're going to be just fine. So you continue, as Alan Simpson said, to be the greedy geezers, and don't worry about it. Even that caveat hasn't helped them.
I'll tell you just one interesting thing that I saw in these town halls is that, you know, people understand what this plan is all about. It's essentially a voucher system. But Congressman Ryan was very, very sensitive about it being called a voucher system. Anytime someone get up and ask him, you know, well, I'm not really comfortable with switching to Medicare as we know it to a plan where, you know, you're taking that money and giving it a lump sum to individuals to take it onto the private market, he would always correct them and say, no, this isn't a voucher system. This is a premium support system.
Oh,
where they're
premium.
Yeah, exactly. Premium support is the new speak on this particular issue.
See, as I've always said, and maybe you'll agree with me, the Republicans are masters at marketing and sloganeering and campaigning. They're masterful at it. I mean, they could probably make some cheap plastic piece of crap sound wonderful with a whole bunch of verbiage to make me actually want to go out and buy it.
That's what they do on
TV all the time. That's what keeps our economy going.
I'm a Democrat, and I'm almost envious of their ability to market a lot of things. You know, you look at the breakdown issue by issue of this country. We're a center-left nation. You know, almost issue for issue, the public at large supports progressives, and yet
they don't know it.
You know, by this marketing and by these tactics and pulling the wool over our eyes on a lot of these issues, they're able to enact some things that most people just really don't support.
And
it's unfortunate.
And the fact that they've got a bigger megaphone.
Exactly. But, you know, thankfully we've got folks like you out there spreading the message, helping, you know, get the good word out.
So at the end of the day here with these town halls, how are you seeing them going overall? Are they going out there and taking their lumps? And maybe they'll come back with some rational thought, because radical self-interest may play into this, and they may want to keep these cushy jobs that they've now got.
It's hard to predict. You know, we're already seeing, though, a number of freshman Republicans taking lumps from their constituents because, frankly, they didn't campaign in 2010 on eliminating Medicare. You know, that just wasn't in the campaign platform. Many of them even went around saying specifically they're not going to vote for the Ryan budget that eliminates Medicare. And yet, you know, here we are earlier this week, last week, the Republicans voted 235-4 in favor of the Ryan budget plan. You know, we found actually a number of instances of other town halls that have happened earlier this week. All freshman representatives, Lou Barletta in Pennsylvania, Bob Dole in Illinois, Charlie Bass up in New Hampshire, they're all catching grief from their constituents at these town halls, telling them, you know, I can't believe you broke this promise. I can't believe you're would vote in favor of ending Medicare and giving more tax breaks to the wealthy. So, you know, I'm hopeful that some of these congressmen will have a change of heart on the issue. That having been said, I'd be pretty, you know, I'm not holding my breath that this is going to happen. And I think what you'll end up seeing is a lot of these freshman Republicans losing their jobs in 2012.
That's the hope anyway. That's the hope, Scott. Anyway, you guys keep up the great work over there at Think Progress. You and Lee do great work over there.
And likewise. Thank you, Rick. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Scott. Scott Kies from Think Progress. We're going to take a quick break back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Back after that.
Radio of, for, and by We the Working People. The Rick Smith Show.
House Speaker John Boehner, Majority Leader Eric Cantor, and Budget Chairman Paul Ryan like to portray themselves as the three budgeteers. Decrying deficits, the GOP's sharp-eyed slashers of federal spending are galloping through Congress with swords flashing, severing billions, nay, trillions, from the national budget. Medicare for seniors, behead it. Food stamps for the poor, whack 'em. Environmental protections, eviscerate 'em. Consumer agency, kill it. Practically all of the slash-and-burn rampage by the three budgeteers comes at the expense of America's middle class and the poor. For corporate powers and the wealthy elites, however, the dynamic trio offers more governmental gimmies, including a one-third cut in their tax rates. The budgeteers are also demanding that government workers take cutbacks. But wait, aren't Boehner, Cantor, and Ryan workers too? Well, yes, but very special workers. So when they recently took our government to the brink of a total shutdown, guess who they rushed to protect? Not emergency responders, toxic waste cleanup crews, air traffic controllers, or millions of other federal employees we count on, but themselves. In the Senate, Barbara Boxer had passed a bill to suspend the paychecks of all Congress critters if the government shuts down, but the three budgeteers blocked it in the House, thus protecting the $174,000 a year that each lawmaker sucks from us taxpayers. But then, the GOP threesome cynically tried to trick the public about their perfidy. They made a show of approving a House version of the congressional pay suspension, but tucked it into a bill with zero chance of passing. This is Jim Hightower saying, Boehner, Cantor, Ryan, remember those names. They think they're clever, and they are hoping that you are stupid.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters? Rick Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. The poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe lies again, because God is a Republican.
Yes, and he wants the rich people to have all the money. You know why? You know why he wants the rich to have all the money? So that they can afford this new product that Kohler has come out with. The Wisconsin-based company has come out with a $6,390 toilet. That's right. A $6,400 toilet. You remember Rand Paul whining that he can't get a toilet that flushes? Well, here is an economical $6,400. In fact, it opens the lid for you. You don't have to even, no more arguing with the missus about the lid up or down. No more arguing with your husband with leaving the seat up. None of that. It's got a pulsating and oscillating bidet with an air dryer. So you can be fresh and clean all the day long. And only for $6,400. It features minimalist design, as well as a heated seat with adjustable height, and a charcoal filter deodorizer. What a wonderful, wonderful thing. Only, again, $6,400. So that's good. You know, you need that every once in a while. And while we're in the bathroom talking about the $6,400 toilet, the mayor of Omaha, Nebraska, has said, you know what? We need to tax toilet paper. to fund our sewer improvements. Evidently, they won't let us raise taxes on the people who live here. So what we need to do, people got to go to the bathroom, and they've got to wipe, unless, you know, obviously they use this $6,400 pulsating and oscillating bidet with the air dryer. But they need $1.7 billion to upgrade their sewer system. So there, his big suggestion is put a tax on toilet paper. That would be an appropriate way to fund a new sewer system. And while we're in the bathroom, might as well stay there. In Angermanland, Sweden, organizer, and this is one of these, it must be a Swedish thing or a California thing, not sure. But they have these events where they do the colon cleaning courses. I'm not quite sure what this means, but they have colon cleaning courses, and evidently they had too many people, not enough bathrooms. So I'm assuming what they do is they pump you full of cleanser, and then you have to, well, do what you have to do once you're full. Evidently this woman did what she had to do, only not where you're supposed to do it, and not on a $6,400 toilet. So she sued and got her $158 back. So very good for her. But if they had the $6,400 toilet with the oscillating and pulsating bidet, everything would be wonderful. And it would have this toilet seat on it from Elkton, Maryland, the guy who got put little super glue on the toilet. He got caught. Police not happy. In fact, firefighters spent 15 minutes getting the victim off of the john. He was only identified as a 48-year-old man who was taken to Union Hospital in Cecil County with the toilet seat still glued to his backside.
How did they get that loose?
Oh, they just took the screws off the seat and he walked away.
Well, I'm talking about his backside from the seat. I guess you get him in a real hot room, huh?
Yeah, well, neither that. And our last toilet humor of the day, if you will, since, you know, people said I need to not be so serious. Robert Johnson, 46, of Key Largo, which I love Key Largo. Beautiful place. Did a lot of diving there. Evidently, he broke into a couple people's homes, decided that he needed a bunch of their stuff, you know, like TVs and DVD players and, you know, a 12-pack of beer because it's Florida, a GPS device and a whole bunch of electronics and stuff. He got caught. Because evidently he had to go, and he left the palm print on the seat, and that's how they nailed him. So that is our toilet humor for the day. And I'm betting it wasn't one of the $6,400 toilets. Can you believe that? $6,400 for a toilet. But and now understand, it has the pulsating and oscillating bidet. For anybody who knows, it's water squirting at you in pulsating and oscillating fashion, and the heated dryer that... So, hands free.
What a disgusting image.
And it goes up and down. That's amazing. Would you pay $6,400 for a toilet?
What do you think?
Even one with a heated seat? Come on.
No.
For those cold mornings?
Would not enter my mind. Not even enter my mind.
Oh, come on.
I'm sure if you even mention it to your wife, she would nix it immediately.
I wonder if Tom Corbett would buy one. I mean, you know, with all the savings savings he's getting from the kids who don't need that education. Anyway, the next time, according to our friends over at the Hypocrisy Watch, their Daily Dose, the next time you're tempted to join Governor Tom Corbett in asking the state's public sector workers to give back a chunk of their $34,000 average salary, the folks over at Hypocrisy Watch urge you to pause for a second and think about porta potties. That's right. With downtown Harrisburg having their little water crisis the last couple of days, thousands of state employees showed up for work this week and were given the option of either crossing their legs or using one of the nearly 20 portable bathrooms set up for their use. Needless to say that a single porta potty was there for every 8,000 employees. Seems kind of like a long line you have to go. But here's the thing. If you look at what they're saying, he said, we don't know if Corbett was home at the time, but fortunately for him, the governor's mansion was assigned two porta potties versus one for the entire Labor Department over there in Pennsylvania. For example, truth be told, this is not where we'd start shared sacrifice. And I agree. I absolutely agree.
It's nice to know we took care of our gov, you know.
Hey, you know, sometimes you got to go, and he's an important guy.
And I slept well last night knowing that.
Did you?
Yeah.
You know, I...
Not!
Wow, scream a little louder. Now my ears are burning. No, I mean, you know, good for him, good for him. Good news, a new report says that Pennsylvania's full-day kindergarten program makes a significant difference in improving children's reading skills. Bad news, Governor Corbett wants to end it. The Pittsburgh Post-Gazette has the details of Pennsylvania's partnerships for children's study that finds big academic benefits from full-day kindergarten, something I've touted for a long time. And, in fact, tonight I went to talk to the superintendent of the school where my kids go to school, and he assures me that in my area, full-day kindergarten is there for good. They are not going to take it away because there are such positive gains. Anyway, the article notes that many of those programs rely on state accountability block grants to pay for all or part of full-day kindergarten programs, but our buddy Governor Tom Corbett has proposed eliminating such grants. In fact, the elimination of the full-day kindergarten program is part of Corbett's proposed $1.1 billion K-12 funding cut. We've been noticing that the Govs refuses to discuss this part of the slash-and-burn approach to education budget. Now we know why. Now we know. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, our good friend Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service, back after this. Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made, and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
The following message is brought to you by SEIU Local 668.
My name is Lewis. I help senior citizens get the services they need. I work for you, the taxpayers, in the Area Agency on Aging. Our senior population is growing. Their incomes are shrinking. Their need for government services is increasing, all at the same time. Funding for these services is not keeping pace, which means long waiting lists, huge caseloads, and more seniors at risk. We all know that these are tough economic times, but who wants to see our senior citizens suffer? They did their part. They worked hard and paid their taxes. Now it's our turn to make sure they get the services they need. Please contact your state legislators today and demand that they respect our senior citizens and vote to increase funding for programs that protect them.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our human services campaign.
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weeknight, The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out our website at TheRickSmithShow.com. And now to find out what's going on in Washington, D.C., Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, thanks for taking time
for
us.
Thank you so much.
More movement on the Defense of Marriage Act stuff, right?
Well, that's right. Essentially what happened is Boehner hired somebody, a law firm, to deal with these cases that have come before on Defense of Marriage Act, and to essentially say that, you know, Congress shouldn't be doing this, and that it should be able to work across state lines and all that kind of stuff. And Boehner hired a contractor, a lawyer contractor, and is paying him $500,000.
Beautiful. I've seen the Republicans have lived up to their campaign pledge. They created a job.
That's right. Well, not only that, Rick Smith, when you really think about it, I mean, here are these guys that are trying to save money, and they're spending $500,000 on the Defense of Marriage Act. Oh, my gosh, I can't wait till I see Boehner again.
But you got to understand, this is political grandstanding. And they did. They did. They created one job. I mean, granted, it's for probably a brother-in-law who needed a job, but, you know, it's still a
job.
Well,
what's interesting is Nancy Pelosi really sent him a letter going through chapter and verse about government ethics and all this kind of thing, but $500,000.
I mean, I got to be honest with you. This is just, this is to me, so stupid. It's such a waste of time. I'm sorry. You know, at the end of this, you know, like my grandfather, I said, don't worry about me, worry about yourself. This is one of those issues. I don't care what my neighbors are doing. I don't care what the people down the street are doing. I just don't. If two guys want to get married, two women want to get married, good luck. Hope it works out for you.
Exactly. $500,000 in this environment, quite staggering.
How about worrying about the, you know, the 50 to 75% of the marriages that are end up in divorce after 5 to 7 years? Why don't you try working on that first? When you've perfected marriage, then you can do something with it.
Good point. And maybe they ought to put some of that money into, you know, a lot of those classes that they have married couples take, et cetera.
Yeah. Just plain dumb to me. And it's such a waste of time. We should be working on how do we rebuild our infrastructure? How do we make sure that our communities are safe? How do we create jobs? That's where we should be spending our time. The FCC is back in the news again.
FCC is back in the news today. Yes, actually, I believe it's called the Economic Club or whatever. It's a group of business people in Washington, D.C. And the head of the FCC spoke about this. Spoke today before the group, and it's very interesting. He's actually somebody who Obama's known for years, played basketball with him. His name is Julius Jankowski. And he said, look, we need to get more spectrum. We need to get more bandwidth. He said, just apps have added $38 billion to the economy, that smartphones use 25 times the amount of bandwidth. Tablets use 145 times the amount than just a, you know, plain cell phone does. And he said, if we can manage to actually take what's happening with these people and sell off the spectrum and then give the people who are selling at the TV stations, et cetera, a piece of the action, there will be much more spectrum available. He also said something really interesting. Do you know that if you are in a situation, you cannot text 911? And he said, this is a terrible situation. People can't text them. They have to call them. And if you're taking a photograph of a bank robber or somebody in a serious accident, you know, a pileup or something, he said, you should be able to text a photograph or get a photograph to 911.
Sure.
But you can't do it in our current technology.
Well, again, you know, the failure to invest in it. It sounds to me what you're saying then is they want to privatize the 911 system.
Well, I don't think our government wants to. I think what they want to do is actually figure out a way to work with it, but he has to bring Republicans along, and there has to be congressional money.
So the pound of flesh is we're going to privatize some of it.
Right.
Because what we're doing now is we're just consolidating, and while I think it's great for the workers of T-Mobile who are going to be able to unionize, I'm not in favor of you know, more consolidation of the web and more consolidation of wireless service. I think we've got too much consolidation.
Well, he was asked about that, actually, and he said that he couldn't comment on that because, of course, there was the Comcast, and I guess there are some other things before the FCC that are coming up.
Well, at the end of this, Comcast is going to own everything. So I've come to that realization. They're going to.
I used to think they were a little itty-bitty company,
yeah,
but they're not.
not anymore. A possible executive order, something I think might be a good idea.
Well, yes, and I mean, this executive order is really this issue of what is going to be happening with the possibility that somehow they're going to force companies who, under the current Senate rules and the current Supreme Court, don't have to disclose people that they're giving money to, all those sort of, I think they're the 501c4s or whatever they are, that they don't have to, you know, give, who are doing campaign videos and all that stuff. And under the executive order the president wants to sign, and according to the press secretary, it's being worked on now, that in order to get government contracts, you would have to disclose where this money is coming from.
I'm all in favor of that.
We all are.
I mean, you look at GE, you look at ExxonMobil, you look at these huge multinational corporations making billions in profit, and not only are they paying zero taxes, we're actually paying them for the privilege of working for them.
Right.
It's just amazing stuff. Some new Homeland Security rules?
That's right. Basically, there's going to be two levels, and they're going to last only 2 weeks before they're either renewed or something. And these levels are going to be elevated or imminent, and they would have to refer to a specific and impending terrorist attack. There may be some levels that are not issued publicly but are given to a specific industry or business, like perhaps the airline industry or something, and is not made public.
Wow, that's a big change from the color-coded system that they used to scare the hell out of the American people with.
For sure, and I think it's a very good change, actually.
I do too. I mean, you know, you go, our former governor here in Pennsylvania, Tom Ridge, said, "Oh yeah, they made me jerk that thing all up and down to get people all worried for nothing."
Right.
Amazing stuff. Good news, Alan. Good news. I appreciate the time, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Thank you.
And what do you got for us tonight, Jake?
Some interesting news coming out of Harrisburg. Joe Scarnati, one of the leaders of the Republicans up on the Hill. He's actually the Senate pro temp. He's calling for limits on legislative reserve funds. Joe Scarnati, who's actually a Republican for Jefferson, has reintroduced legislation that would require excess funds and legislative reserve accounts be transferred back into the general fund. Quote, "For too long, the General Assembly has carried an amount of taxpayer money in reserve accounts that exceed the necessary total. It is my belief that this legislation institutes the appropriate balance needed to continue operations in case of a budget impasse." According to Scarnati, Senate Bill 1000 will retain sufficient funds in the legislative reserve account to allow for the continuation of government business for a four-month period in case of emergencies or a budget impasse. Under the legislation, excess funds would be returned to the general fund. Senate Bill 1000 has 30 co-sponsors and has received bipartisan support. Identical legislation he introduced last year went absolutely nowhere. Government reform groups have been calling for the legislature to take steps to reduce the legislative reserves, which now add up to about $189 million. In this government reform plan unveiled shortly after taking office, Governor Tom Corbett called for the legislative reserves to be reduced, and it does look like, Rick, like this has some legs, and they very well may be able to reduce the excess amount in the legislative accounts. Pennsylvania Game Board reacts to House members' creation of a game-related whistleblowing website. It looks like there's going to be a small war that's going to already has broken out. It'll be interesting to see what comes of it. The Pennsylvania Gaming Control Board clearly is miffed at the House Gaming Oversight Committee chairman and Republican House members. Creation of a whistleblower website for gaming employees and applicants to report wrongdoing. In a letter signed by 7 board members sent to the committee, Chairman Kurt Schroeder, who's a Republican from Chester and Representative Mike Bareeb of Montgomery County, they stated they share the lawmakers' concerns about allegations of illegal activity involving gaming employees or activities, whether they have a basis in fact or not. According to Bareeb, he and Schroeder stand by their decision to create the website. He said any information about problems that could be addressed through policy will likely be turned over by Schroeder. But there is not a chance or probability or any likelihood that neither one of us will turn over any information that has a criminal taint to it to the same agency which has done nothing about some of the very complaints for the last few years, according to Varib. He added that he will be sending Governor Tom Corbett a letter asking him to do everything he can with appointments or any other influence he has to encourage change as terms expire. Needless to say, there's a lack of trust in the Pennsylvania Game Commission, and I think these two people who have some powerful influence up on the Hill have every intention of doing something about that, Rick. Interesting meeting up around State College. Some two very influential people in the state legislature had an interesting meeting up there. It's likely that the natural gas industry in Pennsylvania will see at least a local impact fee, if not a straight-up extraction tax, perhaps as early as the current budget cycle, according to State Senator Jay Corman and State Representative Carrie Benahoff. But the lawmakers went on, any revenue generated through such levies won't be nearly enough to solve the state's budget shortfalls. It's important to understand the magnitude, according to Benahoff, who appeared with Corman for a half-hour panel discussion at State College Area High School. More than 1,000 people, mostly students, turned out to ask questions and listen to the group, which also included State College School Board President Ann McLaughlin and State College Area Educational Association President Holly Jo Werner. Benninghoff said he also believes all potential revenue sources are on the table as the state addresses its fiscal situation, including roughly $4 billion deficit. He estimated that a 10% extraction tax, as proposed in an unsuccessful state bill last year, would bring Pennsylvania about $150 million in annual new state revenues. According to Corman, who, by the way, is from Benner Township, and he's a Senate Appropriations Committee chairman, he said that he believes a local impact fee or a severance tax on natural gas will, I repeat, will materialize in Pennsylvania. He also said that just because gas companies are not paying extraction tax, that doesn't mean that they're not paying other taxes in Pennsylvania. Some of the other remarks at this event, Corman said he would like to see Senate Bill Act on Senate Bill 1, which would enable more widespread availability of school vouchers, be limited to failing school districts only and not affect districts like State College High School. Benninghoff said it's important that school districts retain local control over program offerings such as sports and intramurals. Corman said the state corrections budget, which is worth about $1.87 billion, is growing significantly and demands institutional change. He said the state needs to determine how to control corrections expenses without allowing crime to increase, and he floated the concept of putting fewer people behind bars, particularly by reducing the ranks of nonviolent inmates. And to that, I say amen. Good proposal. Now, whether he can do anything about it remains to be seen, but we talked about the amount of money that we put into jails, and I think that's a good first start. Some good news coming out of Wisconsin, Rick. Activists with more than 30,000 signatures today made sure that the 5th Republican state senator, Alberto Darling, who voted for Governor Scott Walker's bill to eliminate collective bargaining rights of public employees, now will be in a recall fight. News reports say the recall petition has more than 30,000 signatures, far above the 20,343 needed to qualify for a recall election. All five positions have carried far more signatures than the minimum needed to qualify, which was equal 25% of the total vote for governor in November's election in East Senate District. Republicans say they're targeting 8 Democratic senators to recall, but no petitions have been filed, and reports indicate they are barely meeting the 25% threshold. From what I understand, there were some spokesmen on TV last night. They think that they have a legitimate chance, Rick, of having as many as 8 Republicans recalled. And according to them, the Republicans are up to their old tricks. They are actually hiring ex-cons to go out and get signatures, and they're using some questionable tactics. And it looks like there might be an investigation into that. Oh, boy, I'm shocked. The Republicans bringing in outside people with a lot of big money, and they're still having problems getting signatures in Wisconsin.
Well, I mean, they're just building an email list. They're not really going to be able to recall anyone. And you're right. I think you're going to get all eight of them on the ballot. I don't know that you're going to beat them all, but you're going to shake things up. Maybe you get four or five of them.
The definition was defined like this. We got five or six real good wins, and we have two extra, which means you might have an outside chance of even winning those. But it sends a clear message. And for what I understand, Rick, I don't know if you caught this, but there's whispers that what the governor of Wisconsin wants to do is try to take away the right to the public unions to collect their own dues, which is what happened in Florida, and he might make an effort to do that. So whatever they can do, they need to do it quickly. And it looks like there's definitely going to be an effort to recall the governor. And from latest polls, a little disappointed, Rick. It's I believe he leads by 1 or 2 points. It's close, but they're definitely going to recall the governor, too. You can bet on that.
Yep, I'm looking forward to that. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this to wrap things up.
Away from the city, the noise and crowds, the freeway ride. If they slashed our funding, they cut all our hours, our Washington decree. So here I stand with a long line of cars, everyone yelling at me. When did I become the problem? How did the fall become all mine? The president says, I'm tightening the belt, the only one to tighten is mine.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
I'm David Filman, executive director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike, Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. You know, came to show you how far things have gone to the right, how far things have gone against working people. Someone sent me this PSA that the people at literacy.gov have been playing on radio stations here in the state of Pennsylvania. And I got to be honest with you, you know, when I heard this, it stopped me dead in my tracks. Listen to this.
When they arrived at the sheds, a crowd of women erupted into shouting and booing. Martha was right. The strikers were more organized than ever. They carried signs that said, "Huelga, strike." They were yelling, "Help us feed our children." When Esperanza saw their menacing faces, she wanted to run. She wanted to tell them that her mother was sick, that she had to pay the bills. Then maybe they'd understand why she needed her job. But she knew it would not matter. The strikers only listened if you agreed with them. When the guard wasn't looking, one of the strikers picked up a rock and threw it, barely missing a woman's head. Esperanza's heart was beating wildly as she and the women took their places. Explore new worlds. Find out what happens next by reading the book Esperanza Rising by Pam Munoz Ryan. For other great book ideas, visit literacy.gov. A message from the Library of Congress and the Ad Council.
So our tax dollars are paying for this ad to be running on radio stations across the state here. And what's interesting about Esperanza Rising is this is a story about a family who basically, the husband dies, the father dies, and the girl and her mother lose everything. They lose their farm. They had a luxurious life. They lose the luxury. They lose their dreams. They lose all of everything they had. It was taken from them by the big bankers. It was taken from them by the establishment. And what do the folks over at literacy.gov focus on? One story of striking workers in the United States wanting to have a decent wage while working on the farms. When you have folks who immigrated here willing to undercut their labor even further, they chose to use that. We got to get to the bottom of this, find out who put this ad out, because, you know, while I'm not against the book, the way they have presented it is another one of those moments where you go, this is anti-unionism, this is anti-worker at its height, and I'm not paying for it. But we're going to find out about this. We are going to get to the bottom of this one way or another. In fact, I think I want to talk to this author if we can get her, because, you know, at the end of this, I'm sure that was not, and maybe I'm wrong, but I'm sure that was not the intent of the story. I'm sure the story was about someone who lost everything and how they were able to overcome and you know, not this. And I, man, we're gonna figure this stuff out, and quickly. Anyway, next Thursday, Workers' Memorial Day. Here in Harrisburg, there are going to be a couple events. There's a breakfast at 8 a.m. on Thursday the 28th. At 9:30, there will be a memorial service over at Laborers Grove. 9:30 there by the Susquehanna River, just off South Front Street. And at 11 a.m., there's going to be a rally over at the Capitol. So we'd love to have everyone come out and say hello and participate in this event, because understand the folks who came before us, those who fought, bled, and died for our rights on the job, those people who were killed on the job, injured on the job, especially today when you're talking about the 40th anniversary of OSHA. So, again, if you want information on that, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com, and we will get you all the information you need. So good stuff there. I'm flipped over this book. Over the way they presented that, because as I was reading the, you know, and I may go to the library and pick it up. It is for sixth or ninth graders, but I would like to see what the gist of the book is, because the way they presented it, it was those evil workers, it was those evil union people who were throwing rocks at women's heads. Now it's kind of just thrown off the rest of what I'm just infuriated. Because, you know, that's the frame, though, man. That's the frame. And, you know, the fact of the matter is those workers who were on strike, they wanted to pull everybody up. It wasn't a matter of denying them work. It's a matter of if you have someone who's willing to cut their neighbor's throat, it's bad for everybody. It's a race to the bottom. The workers of this country cannot continue on this, I'm going to slit my neighbor's throats for a penny. And, you know, I got out of the trucking industry because of just that. You got people running up and down these roads like their backsides are on fire, slitting each other's throats for pennies, and it's not getting you anywhere. You know, I got a buddy who told me he was home last year 5 days. 5 days. Because he got to make the note, man. You got to pay that truck payment. You got the shiny bumpers. You got to pay for it. And fuel prices are just killing everybody. You think gas prices are bad? Diesel prices are even higher. And understand, a truck gets between 6 and 8 miles to the gallon. So you're filling up a lot of gallons. Man, you know. Yeah, I had a whole bunch of stuff that was going to be funny and ha-ha and uplifting and lively, and this has just really ticked me off.
The rest of the story is, and I've seen this scenario play out several times in my own life, rest of the story is if she doesn't cross that picket line and she becomes even associated with that union, if that union's anything at all, they will help her. They will help her, and that's what the union is about. When people are out on strike and they have problems in their life and the union can help them, they do everything in their power. That's the positive of unity.
But the way that clip makes it sound, the way that clip made it sound was, it was historical fact, and it was being told. This is a made up story that took place back in 1930. But they make it sound, because they know most people are never going to read this book. It's that constant messaging. It's that constant beratement. It's that constant in your ear to where the passive listener goes, all right, see those union thugs, they'll do anything they gotta do to get their way, even though it benefits all of society. It's just, I don't know. Anyway, we're going to be taking tomorrow night off. Going to spend time with the families. We hope you'll do the same. If you miss any portion of the program, you can download our podcast at therickSmithShow.com. If you want to email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. But this weekend, for those of you who celebrate this holiday, best to you and yours. You okay over there? All right. Well, I just want to make sure. I thought I heard some heart palpitations or something going on over there. I thought you were going to fall out on us. But have a great weekend, we'll see you back on Monday. Anyway, I want to thank everybody who came on the program today. I go back to the rally this morning that we went to, and the people who came out to have their voices heard and to stand together. It was such a great thing, and I want to thank them for inviting us and letting us be a part of that. It's something I hope we see a lot more of as we move forward down this path together, because I would love to see our communities come back together. This divisiveness, this at each other's throat because my ideology is smarter than yours and, my free market is better than your regulated free market. I think we're all in the same ballpark, folks. We all want to get to the same place. Just which path are we going to take? I've always believed that. The questions I have now are, with the governors that we've seen doing some of the stuff that they've been doing, kind of makes me wonder. When you're talking about cutting education, slash and burn, kind of makes me wonder. Anyway, I hope everyone has a great holiday, has a great weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday with our regularly scheduled program. And again, if you get lonely, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I do answer all those emails personally, and the podcast will be there for your entertainment and enjoyment. I'm going to spend some time playing a little t-ball with the boy. He thinks he's chopping wood with the bat, so we need him to level that swing out. So we're going to spend the weekend doing that, and I'm looking forward to it. Anyway, have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous array. Democracy is coming.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Yes, I'm grocery day, it is. Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Yes, I'm grocery day.